Okay, no problem. So 16th or 15th. 11.13. 15th chapter, 15th verse. Uddhava is asking a question. Sri Uddhava Uvacha Yadatvam Sanakadibhyo Yena Rupena Keshava Yogam Adishtavan Etad Rupam Ichhami Veditum.
Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Keshav, at what time and in what form did you instruct the science of yoga to Sanak and his brothers? I now desire to know about these things."
So Krishna said, "I have instructed this yoga system to Sanat Kumar earlier." Right? So Uddhava said, "When did you instruct? How did you instruct? What were those instructions? How did this meeting happen? So I want to know about these things." So Uddhava became inquisitive. Now Krishna is responding from the 16th verse. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Putra Hiranyagarbhasya Manasaha Sanakadaya Papruchuh Pitaram Sukshmam Yogasyaikantikim Gatim.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Once the mental sons of Lord Brahma, namely the sages headed by Sanak, inquired from their father about the difficult subject matter of the supreme goal of yoga."
What was their inquiry? That is there in the 17th verse. Sanakadya uchuhu guneshva vijate cheto gunascetasi cha prabho katham anyonya santyango Mumukshor Atitirshor.
The sages headed by Sanak said, "O Lord, people's mind are naturally attracted to material sense objects, and similarly the sense object in the form of desire enter within the mind. Therefore, how can a person who desire liberation, who desire to cross over activities of sense gratification, destroy this mutual relationship between the sense object and the mind? Please explain this to us."
So here Sanaka is asking this question. Sanakadayaha means all the four Kumaras are asking this question. Guneshu avishate cheto. Okay. Guneshu means here the sense objects. In the sense objects. Avishate chetaha. Sense objects enter the mind. Okay, that is number one. Gunas chetasi cha prabho. Then mind enters those sense objects. Right? So there is a mutual relationship. Anyonya santyago. There is a mutual anyonya, mutual relationship between the sense objects and the mind. They are closely connected with each other. So santyago, how can that how can we destroy that kind of mutual relationship that is existing perpetually between the sense objects and the mind? Okay, that is the question. Please explain to us, how do we destroy the relationship between the mind and the sense objects? So, see, sense objects entering the mind, mind entering the sense objects means there is a constant disturbance that is created by the sense objects to the mind. So mind is constantly disturbed by the sense objects, right? And means sense objects are entering the mind. And mind is entering those sense objects, means mind is constantly meditating on the sense objects, right? So because of this mutual, you know, relation, the soul is getting, you know, disturbed, right? So how do we destroy this, how do we cut this knot? So that is the question. Now, Krishna is continuing. So when Sanakadayaha asked this question to Brahma, what did he respond? Krishna is describing now to Uddhava. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Evam Prishto Mahadevaha Swayambhur Bhuta Bhavana Dhyayamana Prishna Bijam Nabhyapadyata Karmadhihi
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Uddhav, Brahma himself, who is born directly from the body of the Lord and who is the creator of all living entities within the material world, being the best of the demigods, seriously contemplated the question of his sons headed by Sanak. The intelligence of Brahma, however, was affected by his own activity of creation, and thus he could not discover the essential answer to this question.
So this is an important verse describing the response of Brahma. Evam prishto Mahadevaha. So here Mahadeva is Brahma. He's like the demigods. Out of all demigods, he's the most prominent demigod. He's Mahadeva. Mahadeva is the word sometimes used for Shiva also. Like the most prominent demigods are addressed like this. So evam prishto, when Mahadeva, Brahma, is questioned like this, what happened? And also one more thing, two qualities of Brahma are mentioned here. Swayambhu, he is born, he is not having a material birth. Okay, he is born directly from Vishnu. He is not born from the womb of a mother. Mother Lakshmi is the mother of Brahma, not because she gave birth to Brahma. Because she happens to be the wife of Vishnu, she became the mother of Brahma. So, he is called Swayambhu. He is not born from any womb. Bhuta Bhavanaha. So, Bhuta Bhavana means he is the creator of these conditioned souls. He created their material bodies. He does the secondary creation, right? That's why he is called Bhuta Bhavana. So, what did he do when he was questioned like this? Dhyaya Manaha Prashna Bijam. Dhyaya Manaha. He seriously considered. Right? Sometimes when the question is simple and easy, immediately there comes an answer. Even the question asker completes, before he completes his question only, we have the answer ready. If the question is easy and simple and the person who is answering has some knowledge about it, answer will come immediately. But when the answer is not very, it's not offhand immediately to give him, so he has to contemplate a little bit. So he started thinking, hey, how do I answer this question? What is the answer to this question? So, still, he did not reach the right answer. Na abhipadyeta. So, na abhipadyeta means he did not reach the right answer because of karmadhi. Intelligence bewildered by karma. What is that karma? Creation. What was the activity? Creation. Because his intelligence is absorbed and bewildered in his activities of creation, he could not give a proper answer. Simple thing. You are constantly studying now. Every day you keep studying. You keep hearing classes, you keep studying, you keep memorizing slokas. So now you are constantly in touch with the book, Bhagavatam. Right? After say 1 year, when you get absorbed in your services, you lose touch with the book. Right? Then immediately you cannot recollect. Oh, what sloka? I memorized it. I wrote in my exam. I got 50 out of 50. But I am not remembering it. This happens. You ask the first batch people, second batch people, right? This will happen to you also. So, because of creation activities, karma dhihi, when our intelligence is absorbed in certain services, right, it's little difficult to recollect the, you know, books that we have read earlier. So, that's why it is important to have a regular quota. Okay, daily say 1 hour, half an hour, let's read. Okay, so that we can be in touch. So, intelligence is absorbed in activities of creation, karmadhihi. So, here in the purport, Rityananda Goswami is quoting Jiva Goswami that in the second canto, I think I discussed this purport a couple of classes back, that in the second canto, Lord Krishna personally blessed Brahma that you will not be bewildered in your activities of creation. Right? Second, Brahma mentioned to Narada Muni, Nabharati menga mrushopalakshate navai pachinme manaso mrushagati name hrishikani patanti asatpate yanme hrudi autkantyavatha dhruto harihi. Because I have captured the lotus feet of Lord with great zeal within my heart, whatever I speak, whatever I do, whatever I think can never go wrong. Okay, Brahma himself said,
And Krishna himself said, you will not be bewildered in your activities of creation. In 3.9 also he said. Right? But this verse clearly says, Krishna himself says that Brahma was bewildered in his activities of creation. That is karmadhihi. This gives a very great lesson, grave lesson to all the devotees, that although one may be elevated to an exalted position, he may be an empowered representative, still, at any moment there is a danger of false pride, polluting one's devotional mentality. Right? If one catches the lotus feet of the Lord with great zeal, definitely he will not be bewildered. Okay, that is the promise of the Lord, that is the conviction of Brahmaji also. But still, there is always, when we are dealing with so many services, matter, which involves dealings with matter, then there is always a scope that one might get distracted or bewildered sometimes. In the fifth canto, we have this verse, Svadanti Vishwam Kavayashvana Smaram Pashyanti Chadhyatma Vidohi Pashyataha Tathapi Muhyanti Tavajamaya Suvismitam Krityam Ajam Natosmitam. So, Tathapi Muhyanti. There are devotees, learned devotees, great sages. They understand the futility of this material world. They can even convince other people, preach to other people also that this material world is temporary. Still, they may get caught up in the temporary affairs of this material world because of the Lord's, the strong energy, material energy of the Lord, and because of their inattentiveness in their transcendental position. This is the reason Prabhupada gives. If one is inattentive in his transcendental position, there is always a scope to fall off from the exalted position. Right? Bharat Maharaj went to bhava stage and he got little inattentive. He got attracted to a deer and then he had to come down to the platform of a deer. Right? So, yeah, there are so many important reasons there. That is because of auspicious prarabdha karma that Lord himself arranged. But the grave lesson to us, we have to see the pastime in two facets. One, we can take a lesson for the practicing sadhaka. Second, we should always see the divine aspect in that and not offend those devotees also who are going through this kind of experiences. Right? So, the lesson here is, just like great devotees, exalted devotees, gurus, spiritual masters, one of its spiritual masters, they engage or they dovetail our propensities in Krishna service. Similarly, Maya has this ability, or she constantly tries to dovetail, you know, the sadhaka's propensities, even good propensities, glorious propensities also in her service. Our Bharat Maharaj did not have any, you know, bad habits, right? He has glorious qualities. He was not a meat eater. He was not a, you know, woman hunter. He doesn't have all this kind of distractions. But he had compassion. He does not have envy, greed, etc. But he had compassion. So Maya attacked through that. His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj gives this lesson from Bharat Maharaj's example, that Bharat Maharaj had this quality of compassion. Maya attacked through that quality of compassion and made that quality of compassion as misplaced compassion on an insignificant deer. So much to an extent that he neglected his own spiritual sadhana to take care of this deer. Right? Knowing very well that an insignificant deer cannot be elevated to spiritual consciousness. Right? And definitely it is not worth sparing one's, you know, neglecting one's own spiritual sadhana to do this kind of job. Right? It's not worth it. So, to give that lesson to all the practicing sadhakas, so there is this example also. So, here in this place, so Brahmaji is affected slightly by his activities of creation and little pride also. That's why he could not give an answer when his own sons and disciples asked this question. Like that. So does it mean that one should not take up the responsibilities of service? When we accept a service, when we take a responsibility, definitely there is a risk. You go to the market and purchase some sabji and come so that we can cook in the DT kitchen and offer it to Vrindavan Vihari. That's a service. But one goes out to purchase some vegetables in the market He has to see so many things. Yeah, he may have to see some billboards, right? He may have to interact with the purchasing fellow, what is that, seller of the vegetables. He may try to cheat, then the consciousness may get disturbed. Right? I will not go to market, my consciousness will get disturbed. Or give this service to someone else. I will sit here and take darshan of Nandiyari. So, every service, or almost every service, has some risk involved. There is some difficulty involved. So, when the difficulty is involved, then one may tend to get distracted. One may tend to get distracted from the sound vibration. One may become proud. If he is able to accomplish that service nicely, he may become proud. If he is unable to accomplish that service, he may get depressed, right? Then there are so many other distractions we could discuss. But that doesn't mean one has to give up the service. The very fact, if you see the case of Priyavrat wanted to renounce. He did not want any distractions, right? He was dedicated to Narada Muni, but Manu came and said, you should take charge of the kingdom. Then he didn't know how he has to respond. And my father is saying, should I respond or not? But no, I'm not so inclined to it. Then Brahmaji came and then spoke, 10-12 verses. And then finally he had to take up the charge of kingdom, right? So there was a important need to be fulfilled. It's a service that he has to take up. So he has to take up that service and then fulfill that. At the end of the chapter, he regrets. I became like a dancing monkey in the hands of my, wife. So, Garhishmati, right? So, I became like a dancing monkey. So then he came back to his senses and he attained the same position as he was as a disciple of Narada Muni. That's how the chapter ends. So, this important lesson was highlighted. When someone takes the responsibility of service under the instruction of a bona fide spiritual authority, he has all blessings. Right? He is empowered to protect himself. And then again, he will not lose that position, he will come back to that position. Right? At the same time, when someone takes the responsibility of service, he should also be intelligent enough and mature enough to manage his service along with his spiritual connection, right? As a part of service, he may have to deal with matter, right? But one has to always be aware that I might get distracted at any moment. One has to be always attentive so that he will not be absorbed or pulled by those forces and get disconnected from the mainstream of spiritual vibration. Right? Services are important. In this material world, there are so many services, they are devotional services, but they involve dealings with matter. One has to be careful in doing it. There is another way is Kumaras. Kumaras said, we will not do this service. Right? So then Prabhupada supported that also. Prabhupada gave supportive statements for Kumaras' action also. Prabhupada glorified Priyavrata also. Both of their cases are exactly the same. So Brahmaji created them and said, you take up the, create progeny. Kumara said, no. Okay, we cannot enter family life. Priyavrata said, yes, I will enter family life as per your instruction. Both cases are exactly correct and Prabhupada supports both also. So basically one needs to know the, of course there are so many perspectives, the way Brahmaji said here, the way Brahmaji said there. We can discuss elaborately, but here the emphasis is Brahmaji, while doing his service, he got distracted, he developed some pride, and he he is unable to maintain that sharp intelligence to answer a spiritual inquiry from his own sons. Right? So there is a risk of that, but the good news is Krishna will always come to help us, just the way Hamsavatar comes and helps him. At the same time, one has to be careful enough not to be overwhelmed by pride and other unnecessary qualities and inattentiveness, so that his spiritual status may be little may come down. So these are like some of the things. So Goshtanandi versus Bhajanandi. That doesn't mean one has to remain Goshtanandi only. Goshtanandi means he just takes pleasure in services, in sadhana, sound vibration only. He is not so much into the, you know, taking responsibility, going out for preaching and like that. Bhajanandi, I'm sorry. So Goshtanandi means he takes more responsibilities there. So both are correct. Both are observed in Krishna, right? But one best person is who takes the risk of service and successfully executes it without you know, getting distracted like that. So Prabhupada is there. So no sannyasi, you know, took the risk of you know, going there, who will go there. And many were discouraging Prabhupada also. Sannyasi cannot go out of cross the ocean, all that. Prabhupada said, okay, I will go. And then he was successful enough. Right? Like that. So that does not mean one should not accept the responsibility of service in spite of having a risk note that it might hamper one's spiritual thing. One should be hopeful of Krishna's support. At the same time, one should be careful enough while doing that service like that. So because unless one engages in service, he cannot assimilate the teachings. Right? Vidura tells Maitreya, I have heard a lot from you. I have heard about the conditioned soul, 3.7, he says. But this entire knowledge will be converted into realization only when I do service. So service transforms the knowledge into realization. Only gaining knowledge, I'll just keep chanting, I'll just study scriptures, that's one thing, that's important, that's needed, that's the main aspect definitely. But for that knowledge, you know, to get assimilated by the sadhaka, one needs service. Actual experience. Yesterday Gaurang Prabhu was also highlighting that in the morning Bhagavatam class. Like that. So Brahmaji is unable to answer now. So what happened to him? Krishna is further describing. Samam Ajintayad Devaha Prashna Parati Tirshaya Tasyaham Hamsa Rupena Sakasham agamam tada.
Lord Brahma desired to attain the answer to the question that was puzzling him, and thus he fixed his mind on me, the Supreme Lord. At that time, in my forms of Hamsa, I become visible to Lord Brahma.
So Brahma could not answer, but the best part of the whole story is Brahma took shelter of Krishna, took shelter of the Lord when he could not accomplish this task of answering a very philosophical question by his sons. So seeking shelter of the Lord in difficulty is a glorious quality that the demigods have. Demons, they want to try to solve their problems on their own. But devotees, they seek shelter of the Lord. So now Hamsa, a very beautiful analogy is given. Hamsa is swan. Swan has the ability to separate milk and water. Now Hamsa here, Krishna is coming in the form of a swan to separate the pure consciousness of Lord Brahma from the modes of material nature. Brahma, being a gunavatara, engaging the mode of passion in the creative activity, he got little, you know, distracted in that and he is unable to answer. So now, but Brahmaji has pure consciousness also. So Krishna wanted to separate that pure consciousness. Right? Only a great exalted personality can separate out those things. He can show this is good. Sometimes when some two disciples have some dispute, they go in front of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta says that, okay, we have some conflict. Now you tell the glorious qualities of this devotee and you tell the good qualities of this devotee. That's why they keep glorifying each other. Then the conflict is resolved. Because the conflict was there because there was a focus on the bad quality, negative aspect of it. But it's not that he has only negative aspect, he has positive aspects also. So, shifting the focus to the positive aspect, the conflict was resolved. That's like one example there. So here, Krishna did not give up hope. Arre, I gave him the service of creation and then he got so distracted. I have to come to answer this question. So Krishna did not get irritated like that. So Krishna came, gave the answer to the question also and revealed that Brahma has proper consciousness also, pure consciousness also. Demigod means he has a mixed consciousness. We discussed in the earlier cantos that he has a desire to lord over this material nature. At the same time, he has a pure desire to serve. There is a contaminated desire. There is a pure desire also. Okay, both make him a manager of this material world, some department of this material world. So now here Krishna wants to reveal the pure consciousness of Brahma. So water is compared to modes, milk is compared to the pure consciousness, and swan is Krishna who is separating it out. So only we have another example of sages. Chand Vena, right? Vena is son of Anga and Sunita. Anga is a very glorious Vaishnava king, and Sunita is a daughter of Adharma, a daughter of death, not Adharma, death. And then there is a, so Anga's body, not Anga's body, Vena's body is a combination of these two, positive part and negative part. So sages churned out the negative part as a form of Nishada, and then he left. Nishada Bahuka? Nishada tribe, Bahuka is the name. Okay, they separated out. Then the pure consciousness remained, pure part remained, from that, you know, Archi and Prithu Maharaj came out. Like that. Only a great sage or an exalted personality or supreme lord have the ability to, you know, purify the person, get the pure aspect of the person. Right? The crows, when go to the, when go to some garden, they go down the garbage only. When a bee goes, it goes to the essence of the flower. Like that. So the focus, when it is shifted on the positive part, that is glorious. Focusing on the negative part, any ordinary soul can do. Like that. So, when the conditioned soul is covered so much by thick layer of false ego, right? Only a pure devotee can penetrate into the thick layers of false ego and reach out to the soul of a person. Okay, and give him something substantial. All other people cannot penetrate into the thick layers of false ego and then reach to that person, because they also have another thick layer of false ego. And there is always, when two people come in contact, these two thick layers start, you know, fighting, and there is an ego clash only. But pure devotee who has, he is so pure, he doesn't have any layer of false ego covering him. So he sees that curtain of false ego, you know. And behind that curtain is the pure soul. He wants to remove that curtain, connect to that soul. That's what preaching means. Why, when a pure devotee speaks, that is more effective than, you know, a neophyte speaks. He may keep the transcription of, say, some you know, great sannyasi, right? A pure devotee. He keeps the lecture transcription, right, 10 pages. He memorizes the entire transcription, right? He tries to imitate the accent also. And then he speaks. Will that have the same effect as a pure devotee speaking? When a pure devotee speaks, it just penetrates. It just hits. Like that. So that is only a pure devotee can do it, or Supreme Lord can do it. Focusing on the positive part. Drishtvamam ta upavrajya kritva pada abhivandanam ब्रह्माणं अगतः कृत्वा पप्रच्छुः को भवान् इति.
Thus seeing me, the sages placing Brahma in the lead came forward and worshipped my lotus feet. Then they frankly asked me, who are you?
When Hamsa came in front of Kumaras and Brahma in this painting, you see, they asked, who are you? Ko bhavan iti. So who are you? Oh, you are looking, Hamsa, who are you? That was the question. So now Krishna, you know, Hamsa got little, you know, disturbed, not disturbed. You know, he didn't like the question, he didn't appreciate the question. What kind of question they are asking? Who are you? So when he came, so Brahmaji came in front, right, and worshipped the lotus feet of Hamsa, right? And Kumaras witnessed that worship. They should understand, our father, our spiritual master, the great creator of this world, Brahma, he is worshipping him. So he must be superior to Brahma. He must be the supreme lord. That much intelligence they should have. Right? Still they are asking, who are you? So he just to purify when you know when somebody asks an irrelevant question to an exalted soul, you get a little spicy feedback, right? So that's what Hamsavatara does now in the next 2-3 verses, right? He kind of discourages the whole question. He proves how it is so redundant and stupid to ask this kind of question, right? And through that message, through that proving that redundancy, he gives a very beautiful message, right? He makes two important points here. So let's see what his response is. 21. Ityaham munibhi prishta tatva jignasubhistada yadavocham aham tebhya taduddhava nibodhame.
My dear Uddhav, the sages, being eager to understand the ultimate truth of the yoga system, thus inquired from me. Now please hear as I explain that which I spoke unto the sages.
Krishna is saying, just listen how I purified them. 22. Vastuno yajnanatva atmana prashna idrisha katham ghatetavo vipram vakturvame kashriya.
My dear Brahmanas, if when asking me who I am, you believe that I am also a jiva soul and that there is no ultimate difference between us, since all souls are ultimately one without individuality, then how is your question possible or appropriate? Ultimately, what is the real situation or resting place both of yourself and of me?
So here, in this, the whole theme of this verse is Hamsa, Lord Hamsa, is making a point to the Kumaras that I am not a jiva. First point. In the 23rd verse, he makes another point that I am not this body. Right? I am not a body. So these two are the main things that he, that's how he defeats them. Okay, how their question is redundant, he proves like that. Now the explanation here is, you are asking me who am I, right? Ko bhavaniti, you are asking me like that. So if you consider me a jiva, then why you are asking this kind of question? Ultimately, all jivas are of the same nature, right? If you are a jiva, I am also a jiva. Then where is the difference between you and me? Right? So in that sense, your question is redundant. If at all I have to answer your question, I have to answer in terms of nature and qualities of a jiva only. Essentially, you and me are same. Essentially, if I am a jiva, essentially this jiva and that jiva both are same. Right? Where is the difference? Why are you asking this question? Ko bhavaniti? Why there is no meaning to this question like that? And another point he makes is katam ghateta ko vo vipra vaktur vame ka ashrayaha. The real situation, ashraya means shelter or the real condition, situation, resting place. Okay, ashraya means the resting place or shelter. Krishna's question is, what is our actual resting place or shelter, means what is our ultimate nature or constitutional position, right? This is because no one can come to rest or be satisfied unless one is in one's natural position. Like that. So by inquiring about the shelter or resting place of himself and the Brahmanas, the Lord is indicating the eternal constitutional position of every living entity. Right? So, no, that's one thing. Your question, if you consider me a jiva, your question is redundant. Right. Second, if one jiva has to inquire from another jiva, the another jiva has to be in a superior position. Someone who is knowledgeable can give an answer, can give some knowledge to another person who doesn't have that knowledge. Right. So, yeah, the second paragraph is about that, inquiring from a guru. If Krishna was also in the jiva category, and if all living entities including him were thus equal,
there would be no deep purpose in living entity inquiring another. Right? One fellow is asking, another fellow is answering. There is no meaning. Only one who is in a superior position can meaningfully answer important questions. Right? Now another question may come. Are Guru answers disciples' questions. Guru is a jiva. No, disciple is also a jiva. How do we resolve this question? If we consider that one jiva answering another jiva is redundant, Guru is also jiva. But a bona fide guru, spiritual master, speaks on behalf of Supreme Lord. He doesn't speak on his own behalf. He doesn't speak like a jiva. He just repeats the instructions of the spiritual master, superior person, and he speaks on their behalf. We'll get to know more of this in the next chapter also. Right? In that sense, Guru is representing Krishna and he is answering the questions of a disciple. He is perfect and bona fide. Like that. On the other hand, other people who are not bona fide gurus, they represent themselves only and their answering is not very effective. Like that. In the last paragraph it is said, Lord Krishna's actual purpose is to explain the ultimate perfection of yoga, which the sages were desiring to know. If one becomes fixed in transcendental knowledge, the mutual attraction between the material mind and material sense objects automatically ceases. A glimpse of the final answer is given here only. The original question, what was the original question? Our mind and material senses are, there is a relationship between them. How to destroy that relationship? Mutual relationship. To destroy that mutual relationship, one has to have transcendental knowledge. It will be elaborated more. Essence is given here. The spiritual mind is not attracted to material objects. When we have transcendental knowledge, this material mind that has tendency to get attracted to material sense objects is spiritualized. And when the mind is spiritualized, it will not get attracted to material sense objects. In a sense, that is the answer. Spiritualizing the mind means cutting the relationship between mind and sense objects, material mind and sense objects, like that. 23rd verse. Panchatmakeshu bhuteshu samaneshu cha vastuta ko bhavan iti vah prashno vacharambho hyanarthaka.
If by asking me, who are you, you are referring to the material body, then I must point out that all material bodies are constituted of five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air and ether. Thus you should have asked, who are you five? If you consider that all material bodies are ultimately one, being constituted essentially of the same elements, then your question is still meaningless, since there would be no deep purpose in distinguishing one body from another. Thus it appears that in asking my identity, you are merely speaking words without any real meaning or purpose.
Okay. Now, if you consider me a jiva, then your question is redundant. If you consider me this body made of five, material body made of five elements, then also it is meaningless. Right? How is it meaningless? In two ways. This body is made of five elements. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. You should ask, who are you five? You ask, who are you only? Then they may present a logic. No, all these five elements is like, this word is there, right? Samaneshu cha vastutaha. All bodies are constituting these five elements only. Means essentially, every material body is a combination of these five elements only. In that sense, we can ask, who are you? We need not ask, who are you five? Right? They may prove that much. Still, even if you consider who are you, the question, who are you, is valid and who are you five is not needed. Still, because everybody's body is same, right? Still your question is meaningless only. Your body is same, my body is same. Made of the same elements. Then there is no difference between you and me. Then where is the distinction? When you say, who are you, then I am a separate entity. So basically the Brahmavadic impersonal conception of the Kumaras is being challenged here by Lord Hamsa. So he refutes the false identification with the material body composed of material five elements. So, yeah, this all we discussed. Okay, if one accepts either the theory that all living entities are ultimately the same, or the theory that all living entities are ultimately non-different from their material bodies, in both cases, the question of the sages is meaningless. two conceptions are there. Number one is every living entity is ultimately the same. You and me are same. We are God, I am God, everyone is God. There is no difference between all of us. So that if one accepts that theory, then the question who are you is redundant. Second, if the person is same as the body, right? If one has this bodily conception, if one has one is identifying himself with this body only, then also who are you question is redundant, because ultimately all bodies are same, all souls are same, like that. He established these two points. My addressing you as Brahmanas is merely an exhibition of... Sages might give an important argument. The sages might argue that even among learned persons it is common practice to ask questions and give answers on many subjects as a part of normal life. The sages could point out that Lord Krishna also distinguished among them by saying, Vipraha, O Brahmanas. You just called us, O Brahmanas. Means there is some distinction between you and me. Right? They may argue like that. So, in this way, it is seen that the Lord also accepts the ordinary customs of questions and answers. To answer this argument, Krishna states, Vacharambhohi anarthakaha. My addressing you as Brahmanas is merely an exhibition of words, if you are ultimately non-different. I merely reciprocated with your approach to me. Right? So, the Lord is playing safe. You cannot catch me in argument. Therefore, if you are ultimately one, neither my statement nor your question has any real meaning. It's just a mere exchange of words, superficial exchange of words. Like that. So, now they were a little humbled. Okay. Now he starts replying to the original question from this verse onwards. No, not from this verse. From next verse onwards he starts answering the question. This verse he makes another point. Now, till now he is establishing, I am not on the jiva plane and I am not on the material bodily plane. Right? He is not a jiva, that he proved in the first verse. In the second verse he says he is not the body, which is made of five gross elements. Right? Means he is transcendental. He is beyond the jiva category, he is beyond the panchamahabhuta category. He is Supreme Lord, he is the creator. Right? Now, some people may question, may have this kind of conception. Yes, there is a creator of this universe, right? He created and then he resumed his own activities. He is in his own world, right? He just created this material world and then he is doing his things. Because somebody created this pen and then he launched it in the market and we are using. The creator of this pen has nothing to do with this pen or pencil, right? That's how people present the creator, the God to be, right? Then, denying his identity with this, in the jiva category and with the creation, still Krishna in this verse, in the 24th verse, Hamsa Avatara, is presenting that I am very much within this creation. I am very much connected with this creation. That point he is making. I am creator. I am not a detached creator. Right? I am not a disconnected creator. Not detached. I am not a disconnected creator. I am very much connected with my energy. Right? That point he makes in the 24th verse. Manasavacha sa drishtya grihyate anyair apindriyai aham eva namattonyad iti buddhyadvam anjasa.
Within this world, whatever is perceived by the mind, speech, eyes or other senses is me alone and nothing besides me. All of you, please understand this by a straightforward analysis of the facts.
He said, I am not a jiva. He said, I am not these five material elements. Second, at the same time, I am connected with all these. I am connected with this world. Whatever you see around you, these trees, plants, all these objects, they are all me only. Means they are all my energies only. Okay? So wherever you see, you can perceive me. Whatever you see in this entire cosmic manifestation is a manifestation of my own potencies, my own energies. I am very much connected. Okay? You can perceive me everywhere. That's what he says. Mayatatam idam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina matsthani sarvabhutani nachaham teshu avasthitaha. So I am all pervading. Okay, through the medium of my energies, I am
You are waiting through entire cosmic manifestation. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate. So everything is emanating from me only. He establishes these beautiful conclusions in these three verses. Some people argue that God has no tangible connection with this world, nor does he interfere in human affairs. Ultimately they came, God is so great that he cannot be known. He is so great. He created this entire complicated material world and he just rested. He retired. He is sitting there. He has no more connection here. Like that. So Krishna removed that false claim also. So even if the Lord is supreme, he is not different from this creation. Therefore, what is the meaning of your question? Who are you? We can clearly see that the Lord is paving way for a deeper discussion of spiritual knowledge. Okay, in these three verses, Lord made these three points. So 25th verse onwards, he starts answering the original question. Mind's connection with the material objects. Guneshva vishate cheto gunascetasi cha prajaha jivasya deha ubhayam gunascheto madatmana.
My dear sons, the mind has a natural proclivity to enter into the material sense objects, and similarly the sense objects enter into the mind. But both this material mind and the sense objects are merely designations that cover the spirit soul who is part and parcel of me.
So these two are either sense objects or this material mind, they are just coverings on the soul. We know there is soul, around the soul is a subtle body, which is MBA, Man Buddhi Ahankar. Then around it there is earth, water, fire, air, ether, combination of these five elements, that is material body, gross body. Gross body, subtle body are just coverings on the soul, right? And this subtle body, this mind, gets attracted to certain sense objects, okay, which are basically combinations of these five elements, right? So there is a connection there. But first, let me make this point clear, that they are just coverings on the soul. They are like material designations, upadhis only. Right? He made that point. The material sense objects always enter into the functions of the mind, and similarly, the mind always enters into the material sense objects. Thus, it is proper that we inquire from your lordship about the process by which the sense objects will no longer enter the mind, and the mind will no longer enter the sense objects. So, now the Kumaras may say, Chakvartivat presents the whole conversation like this. Kumaras might say, "Oh Lord, you just humbled us so much by making these points in the last three verses. But our question is very honest, right? We are sincerely questioning you that you cannot deny the fact that our mind is getting attracted to sense objects. So we want to know how to disconnect it, right?" So they say like that. "Our dear Lord, if it is indeed true that we are unintelligent, still your lordship has stated that you are actually everything, because everything is an expansion of your potential. Right? Therefore, you are also the mind and sense objects. This is important. This is the point. Which are subject to matter of our question." In the 24th verse, you made a point that whatever you see around me is me only. Around you is me only. You are seeing so many things around you. That is all me only. They are my manifestations of my energy only. Now, this is, if these are all manifestations of your energy, our mind is a manifestation of your energy, these sense objects are a manifestation of your energy, and we have some questions about those two. Okay, please answer that. Okay. We accept that we are unintelligent by asking who are you, but our earlier question is valid. Please answer that. Like that. "In conditioned life, the living entity artificially imposes upon himself the mind and sense objects, which act as covering designations of the eternal soul. Since it is the natural function of the material mind and sense objects to mutually interact, how can you possibly endeavor to prevent such a mutual attraction? Since both the material mind and the sense objects are useless, they both should be completely given up." The answer is here. Material mind and sense objects are useless. One has to give up them and free from this material reality. Okay. So give up this material mind means what? How will you remove the mind and then throw it away? You may remove a sense object, you can take this glass and throw it away, but you can't remove the mind and throw it away, right? Give up the conception. That's why in the 12th chapter of the 3rd canto, when Brahmaji was doing his own creation, several times it comes that Brahma gave up the body, Brahma gave up the body, Brahma gave up the body. Brahma gave up the mentality, okay, not the body. Similarly, destroy, give up your mind means give up your mind's mentality to enjoy the sense objects. Purify it, spiritualize it. Right? Divert your mind's thoughts towards a noble purpose than enjoying the sense gratificatory objects. So that's what it meant. Make that. So the other day we were discussing bodily conception is not just identifying oneself with this body which is made of earth, water, fire, air, ether. It is also identifying oneself with our mental concoctions, intellectual convictions and egoistic ideas. Right? Subtle body is made of mind, intelligence, ego. Okay, that is subtle bodily conception. One has to give that up also. That's what he is mentioning here. Sridhar Swami says, symptom of the material mind is the tendency to consider oneself the ultimate doer and enjoyer. Bhoktaram yajna tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram is Krishna. But the living entity thinks that I am Bhokta, I am Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. At least I am the Maheshwaram of this loka, this house, this building. So that is actually material mind. That is symptom of material mind. One has to give up that puffed up mentality of being the enjoyer and the doer. Okay? This actually all the purports are very eloquently written that if you have to underline, you have to fill the whole book. Right? But at least this whole page, I could, 184th page, right, the paragraph above the 26th verse, that every line is very important and deep. Let's read this paragraph. One who considers himself to be the doer and enjoyer will be irresistibly attracted to the means for attaining sense gratification and false prestige, namely exploitation of material objects. Whoever considers himself the doer and enjoyer, he irresistibly gets attracted to sense gratificatory objects. So means he maintains connection between his mind and the sense objects. The whole emphasis is on cutting it by spiritualizing it, by giving up the doer mentality, by giving up the enjoyer mentality. Okay. Then one who receives his original spiritual mentality becomes automatically detached from material attraction. So the solution is, which is often repeated in this whole section, in this very small section, the solution is repeated. Spiritualizing the mind, spiritualizing one's mentality. So when the mind or senses are attracted to material enjoyment, the superior intelligence must immediately detect that illusion. Between there is mind and there is sense objects, and above the mind is intelligence. Intelligence should be spiritualized so that intelligence, spiritually intelligent mind, intelligence will control this mind, not to get attracted to the material sense objects. And how do we make the intelligence spiritual or superior? By devotional service. By devotional service, such detachment and intelligence will automatically awaken. Detachment and intelligence is what? Jnana and Vairagya. By bhakti, Jnana and Vairagya will come. Okay, with that Jnana and Vairagya, one will be able to give up this material, one will be able to cut the connection between material mind and sense objects. Clear? If you do bhakti, you will get jnana and vairagya. What is that? Intelligence and detachment. Right? With this intelligence, we can control the mind. Right? And with that detached mind, we will not become attracted to sense objects anymore. That's how the connection between material mind and the material sense objects is cut. Like that. The other day, Gauram Prabhu was nicely mentioning how to spiritualize the mind by chanting. How to spiritualize the intelligence by studying Bhagavatam. How to purify is the word he used. How to purify the ego in the association of devotees. Right? That experience many of us have. Then, when the whole subtle body is purified like this, gross body is nothing but a manifestation of the desires of the subtle body. When the subtle body is dictating, the gross body functions. Simple. gross body does not have the ability to function on its own. It is just being directed by the subtle body. One has to focus on the subtle body. We learn in our earlier cantos that when a guru gives initiation to his disciple, so disciple diksha kale shishya kare atma samarpan, right? Sehi kale, what is that? His body becomes spiritualized. Atma sam. Equal to Krishna's. The process of initiation, diksha, spiritualizes one's body. So how does that spiritualization of body happen? After diksha also, I'm feeling pain and pleasure and then itching and all those things are happening. So the explanation is given by Prabhupada that when a guru initiates a devotee, and when the disciple follows the spiritual instructions of the guru, slowly the subtle mind, subtle body will be spiritualized. Whatever he desires is for the service of Krishna, right? That's how his mind and intelligence and ego are getting spiritualized, right? His intelligence is sharpened through spiritual instructions. His mind is getting spiritualized by chanting, and his ego, his identification is becoming as a servant of Krishna, not as an enjoyer or doer. And this gross body is just functioning according to the desires of subtle body. So now the subtle body is spiritualized, gross body is also spiritualized. With body we do activities, with spiritual body we do spiritual activities, with material body we do material activities. But in this material body we are doing spiritual activities, means the material body is getting spiritualized. It's just a matter of time. Once the devotee leaves this body, he gets an ultimate spiritual body. It's as good as that he is in the spiritual body only. Just a few years are separating him. After death, he will anyways attain spiritual body. That's how Prabhupada explains this. Like that. 26th verse. He gives up his body, no? After. Oh, subtle body. Yeah, he can. With that subtle body. Subtle body means basically his desires. He has spiritual desires. He developed those spiritual desires. He will continue the service in spiritual world. That's what it is in the Prabhu. Spiritualized mind. He has spiritual desires. He has spiritual intelligence. His spiritual identity is servant of Krishna. With these three, he will go to spiritual world. It's like, if you want to call this as, with this, subtle body, will he go to spiritual world? Maybe. Is that correct?
See, there's a difference between fire and fiery. Fire is fire, but iron rod can be fiery. Now, iron rod, if you put in, iron rod's quality is actually, it is blackish and, but when you put it in fire, it becomes red hot, and yellow hot and white hot it becomes. Similarly, the spiritual body, the subtle body, why is it clinging to the soul? Because there is some contaminated desire in it, which causes the repeated birth and death. But when, at the time of our death, the gross body falls off, but then another new gross body comes like a precipitate out of the subtle body. And that too, that can only come if there is some contamination in the subtle body. Like just now Prabhuji said, if the subtle body is put in the fire of Sankirtan movement, and the contamination is removed completely, then there is no purpose of having the subtle body in the material world. Because, for example, imagine somebody takes you to a meat shop now. You have no purpose there. You are not going to spend any money there. And for them, you are useless. Similarly, your subtle body becomes useless for the material world. So then, the fiery subtle body and the soul's quality, they exactly match. At that time, the subtle body gives up. Then the soul goes to spiritual world.
And I also heard that in the spiritual world, there is no difference between soul and body.
Our Janinivas Prabhu said, Prabhupada told in one of the lectures, that the soul is like an egg shape now. Right now, when we are un-Krishna conscious. But when we start becoming Krishna conscious, gradually the original form of the soul is manifested. So that soul himself is the Swarupa. There is nothing more Swarupa separately.
So all these desires, spiritual desires, intelligence, then identity are there in spiritual world also. But there is no terminology of subtle body, gross body there. Those terminologies don't exist.
26th verse. Guneshu cha vishat chittam abhikshnam gunasevaya gunascha chitta prabhava madrupa ubhayam tvajajet.
A person who has thus achieved me by understanding that he is not different from me, realizes that the material mind is lodged within the sense objects because of constant sense gratification, and that the material objects are existing prominently within the material mind. Having understood my transcendental nature, he gives up both the material mind and its objects.
So, by understanding the transcendental nature of the Lord, one will be able to give up this material mentality. Okay. Again, Krishna emphasizes on purifying one's intelligence, understanding Lord's nature, transcendental nature, like that. So, here, the Lord again states that it is most difficult to separate the material mind from objects. But the material mind, by definition, considers itself the doer and enjoyer. Okay, because. So giving up the material mind does not mean giving up all mental activities, but instead means purifying the mind and engaging one's enlightened mentality in the devotional service. Okay, one's enlightened mentality in devotional service, like that. The other day in our Brahmachari class, there was a discussion led by Gaurang Priya Prabhu, that someone questioned Prabhupada, and do you have lust? Right? Prabhupada says, yes, I have no time, but I have no time. I have no time for it. So, means like the message there is, one is so absorbed in the service of Krishna that he has absolutely no other botherations of fulfilling his sense gratificatory desires. Like that. Other day I was mentioning this rivers ripple example, right? So, river has so many, you know, millions of ripples, right? They will never stop. So they are like our sense gratificatory desires are like ripples on the river that will never stop. But when the river meets the ocean, the tides of the ocean will overwhelm those things. Our desires will automatically disappear. We are just, the river is just mixed with the ocean. Means the devotee is just engaged in the plans of a pure devotee and his sense gratificatory desires are gone. So the gist in this whole episode, what is the take home point? What is the practical application point for all the readers is just engage in devotional service. Right? Devotional service will disconnect the material mind from the material sense objects. Right? Only the mind, when it is given a higher taste and higher responsibility, spiritual responsibility, it will be able to give up the material distractions. Right? That is the gist. Without surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord, mere renunciation cannot take one to out of this material world. Means someone wants to disconnect the material mind from material sense objects. He is constantly trying to do it. Okay, by exercising renunciation, vairagya. I will go there, I will go somewhere into the deep, external renunciation. He will just go deep into the forest and start meditating, or just stay away from sense objects. Whenever a plate of halwa comes, I will not eat. Right? So I will not go out. So all the say are there. But unless the mind is given a better engagement, it cannot give up the lower tendencies. Like that. Just as sun's rays are part and parcel of the sun, the living entities are part of Supreme Lord. When the living entity is completely absorbed in his identity as the part and parcel of Supreme Lord, he can become wise and easily give up material mind and sense objects. Right? Identity has to be clear. In the third canto also, in the Kapil Dev section, we read that mind is innocent. Actually, mind is born out of goodness. Mind has full submissiveness, right? Surrendered to ego. So mind is so submissive and surrendered to the false ego. So we have to work on the false ego. When the person identifies himself as a doer or an enjoyer, as a boss or a husband or a employee or a CEO or whatever, that is his identity. That is his false ego, means that is his identity. And what is the function of mind? It just serves the false ego. It just protects the false ego. Oh, you are identifying yourself like this? Okay, then my mind's functions are thinking, feeling and willing.
So whatever I think, whatever I feel, whatever I will is according to this identity. Right? You identify yourself as the CEO of a company, the mind plans and wills and does things according to that identity. If one changes that identity, okay, even if one starts identifying himself to be a servant of Krishna and the servant of Vaishnavas, then the mind's thinking, feeling and willing will be molded according to this identity. Right? So ego is the main villain. Right? Mind is just assistant of the villain. If it reads to the villain, then the assistant will automatically become Krishna conscious. So gunascha chitta prabhava madrupa ubhayam tyajet. So madrupa here is absorption in the form, qualities, pastimes and associates of Krishna. So immersed in such ecstatic meditation, one should render devotional service. And this will automatically drive away the influence of sense gratification. By himself, the living entity does not have the potency to give up his false identification. Okay? And how to identify oneself as servant of Krishna in the association of devotees? Right? By hearing the descriptions of Madhrupa, all these are given. So the solution is getting clearer, right? Purport by purport. Like that. Next, 27th verse. Jagrit svapna sushuptam cha gunato buddhi vrittaya tasam vilakshano jivaha sakshitvena vinishchitaha.
Waking, sleeping and deep sleep are the three functions of the intelligence and are caused by the modes of material nature. The living entity within the body is ascertained to possess characteristics different from these three states and thus remain as a witness to them.
So the other day also we were discussing, living entity is just a witness. So what's happening is, under the influence of material modes, the senses and the sense objects are interacting. Right? So mind, the soul is just observing, seeing, just as a witness. What is soul's role? It will come more. Soul only identifies. That comes in the next verse, 28th verse, purport. It's basically identifying oneself with this material body. Okay? Simple. Soul is there in this body. And super soul is there in this body. What is the difference between both of them? Both are pure, but both are Sachidananda. But only difference is, soul identifies himself with this gross and subtle bodies, but super soul doesn't identify himself with this gross and subtle body. When the soul is pure, when soul stops identifying oneself with the gross and subtle bodies, then all the functionings of this material world, interaction between senses and sense objects, he becomes totally indifferent to all of them. Right? He becomes like the super soul there. Okay, in terms of activity. Not that they both become one. But he becomes as good as super soul in terms of his identification and connection. Right? So the difference between a conditioned soul and a pure devotee is the identification between soul and super soul. In the third canto, 7th chapter also, when Vidura questions like this, how come the pure soul get entangled in these modes, he gives the same answer. Actually, there is no entanglement for the soul in the modes. Right? How can the pure spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, be entangled in the modes? It's only the identification, false identification, misidentification, that's the word used there. It's only a misidentification, it's like a dreamy state. Just like somebody sleeps in the sleepy state, he will identify himself as a king. But he's not a king. Actually, he's not a king. Similarly, when the soul is entrapped in this material body, he's identifying himself as a human being or a dog or an animal or an American or an Indian. That is just an identification, misidentification. But actually, there is no entanglement. Right? If one understands that through the process of devotional service, then he becomes indifferent to the functions of this material nature. All this will come now in today's chapter only. So this Jagrat, Swapna, Susupti, these three states are there. When these three states are there, many things may happen, but soul is just witnessing it. The spirit soul actually has nothing to do with the material world. having no permanent or natural relationship with it. It's not permanent, it's not natural also. Right? What is not permanent is definitely what is not natural. Real renunciation means to give up the illusory identification with matter in its subtle and gross forms. Giving up the identification. And what is that giving up? What is that state? Turiyam. Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti. These three states are like illusory. A wakeful state is born out of goodness. A dreamy state is born out of passion. A deep sleep state is born out of ignorance. Right? But all three are under the modes only. But Turiya stage is beyond these modes. That happens that one can attain that stage only by devotional service. Like that. Real freedom means sakshitvena. Sakshi means witness. Okay? Witness to the functions of the illusion. Just such an advantageous position is achieved by development of Krishna consciousness. That the state of just witnessing this functionings of illusion and not getting entangled by it and not identifying with it happens by Krishna consciousness, devotional service. Like that. And the Turiya stage is further elaborated in 28th verse. Yarhi samsruti bandhoyam atmano guna vrittida mayiturye sthito jahyat tyagastad guna cetasam.
The spirit soul is entrapped in the bondage of material intelligence which awards him constant engagement in the illusory modes of nature. But I am the fourth stage of consciousness.
What is this bondage of material intelligence? This is Puranjani. Spirit soul is Puranjana. What will happen when both of them come together? Awards him constant engagement in illusory modes of nature. The whole city gets developed, filled with population. That is Puranjani Puranjana. But I am the fourth stage of consciousness, that is Krishna, beyond wakefulness, dreaming and deep sleep. Becoming situated in me, the soul should give up the bondage of material consciousness. At that time, the living entity will automatically renounce the material sense objects and material mind. So Krishna is giving here the formula. I am in Turiya stage, beyond these three modes. This Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti are in the realm of three modes. Turiya stage is beyond the three modes. And Krishna is in the three modes, Vishuddha Sattva. If one gets into that zone, then he will be able to give up the connection between this mind and other sense objects. Same thing is mentioned in this purport also. Lord Krishna now specifically answers the questions. Okay, ultimately the spirit soul has nothing to do with the material sense objects, but and modes also. But because of one's false identification with the material body, the modes of nature are empowered to engage one in illusory occupations. Modes are empowered to engage one in illusory occupations. Such a heavy line. And how does that happen? Our identification. One's identification with the material body. By identifying ourselves with the material body, we are just placing ourselves under the control of these modes and material nature. Take me wherever you want. I surrender unto you. We say like that. Just one thing if we do, stop identifying ourselves with the material body, then whatever the modes do, we are indifferent. Like that. That is the message given. I'm just explaining the things here. It's not that I am not identifying with the body or other things, but this is the concept. By destroying the false identification with matter, the soul gives up the illusory occupations. Right. Same thing Maitreya Muni also says in the third canto, seventh chapter. Right. He gives that example. When will one see one's head cut off? Only in dream. Right? Similar, seeing one's head cut off is possible only in dream. And that's in illusory state. Similarly, souls cutting connected with this material modes is just an illusory state. It's as good as a dream. Right? Actually, spirit soul is Sachidananda. Right? So living entity is not empowered to independently free himself from illusion. One must situate himself in Krishna consciousness. See, along with the conclusion, along with the tattva, the practice is also given here. So many times it is emphasized by Krishna consciousness. What is that? One has to spiritualize the mind. One has to cut the connection between material modes and sense objects, all that. But the process is same, Krishna consciousness. Right? Krishna consciousness is the ultimate solution. That is, the whole thing is a glorification of Bhakti Yoga only. So if you see entire Uddhava Gita, Krishna seems to be speaking so many objects, so many, you know, paths or so many, sections. But the ultimate conclusion, the essence of all of those statements is you practice Bhakti Yoga. Okay. 29th verse, the real villain is getting introduced. Ahankara kritam bandham atmanortha viparyayam vidvan nirvidya samsara chintam turye sthitastyajet.
The false ego of the living entity places him in bondage and awards him exactly the opposite of what he really desires. Therefore, an intelligent person should give up his constant anxiety to enjoy material life and remain situated in the Lord, who is beyond the functions of material consciousness.
So, it is the false ego. False ego means identifying oneself with something which is not. Okay? Something, it's not the reality, but you are identifying with that non-reality. That is false ego. That is ahankara kritam bandham. That creates bond. That ahankar creates bondage. Atmano artha viparyayam. Artha viparyayam means getting useless. Artha viparyayam, being the opposite. So false ego is giving the opposite results. True ego will give the true results. False ego will give false results, opposite results. Like that. Vidvan nirvidya samsara chintam turye sthitas chadiyat. So 30th verse he said, be situated in turya. And how will that turya stage will come? That he is mentioning here. Samsara chintam turye sthitas tyajet. Right? Vidvan nirvidya. Nirvidya, being detached from this samsara. Nirvidya samsara chintam turye sthitas tyajet. One will be situated in the original position. So, actually living entity always desires a blissful life. He is the happiness seeking. What is that Sanskrit? Anandamayobhyasat. He always wants ananda. So he adopts procedures that actually cover in his pursuit for happiness, his pursuit for ananda, he covers himself with temporary things. Right? He covers his original eternal blissful nature with something opposite. With something opposite. That's why, and he starts contemplating. Samsara chintam. So that one has to give up. This false intellectual identification with the material world, one has to give up. Okay. Samsara chintam can also mean anxiety to enjoy the material world. Etadhi atura chittanam matrasparshechayamahu. So samsara chinta means contemplating on this material world, on how to bring one's senses in contact with the sense objects to get some illusory happiness and to cover up the soul. More and more. Then, yavannanarthadhi pumso nanivarteta yuktibhi jagratyapi swapan agnya swapne jagaranam yatha.
According to my instructions, one should fix the mind on me alone. If, however, one continues to see many different values and goals in life rather than seeing everything within me, then although apparently awake, one is actually dreaming due to incomplete knowledge, just as one may dream that one has awakened from a dream.
So, nanartadhihi, that's a nice word. Nanartadhihi, one's conception, one's intelligence is, bahushaka. He's just going behind different things, not fixed on one point, ultimate goal, that is developing love of Krishna. Apart from that, he is going everywhere, all over the universe. That is nanartadhi. So, what one should do? Give up those nanartadhi, fix your mind only on me. Right? Nani vartyata yuktivhi. Now, another point here is, just as one may dream that one has awakened from the dream. For example, we sleep in the morning, say 3:30 or 3:45, we have to get up. alarm rings and then we switch off the snooze the alarm, and still in the mind we think that we got up, we took bath, we went for Mangala Arati, and then actually, and then when the snooze comes again, you know, 4:15 or 4:30, then samsara already started. Like that may happen, right, sometimes. That's what he's saying. Just as one may dream that one has awakened from the dream. Like that. So some people think that I am not in Maya. That is Maya. Somebody came and told Prabhupada, sometimes I go into Maya. Prabhupada said, sometimes you come out. So one who is not Krishna consciousness cannot understand that everything is resting within Krishna. And that is impossible for him to retire from material sense gratification. One may adopt a particular process of salvation and consider oneself to be saved. What is that verse? Yenyaravindaksha vimukta maninaha. Vimukta maninaha. Esa mantehe. We are liberated. They think like that, but they are not so. Okay? These people are thinking that we have already woken up. We are already standing in Mangala Arati, but they are still sleeping on in the mosquito net. It's like that. Snooze. Similarly, one may consider oneself to be saved, but if he remains absorbed in making material value judgments between good and bad without reference to devotional service, he is understood to be a conditioned soul covered by illusory identification. So some say that we are great moralists, we are loyal, we are honest. Similar things are there. As long as we do this, we act in a good way, we just work according to our honesty and certain holding certain principles. Why are you bringing God into picture? Okay? Without reference to God, without reference to Krishna and Krishna Bhakti, whatever good things and bad things you discriminate and do only good things and avoid bad things, that is still on a material plane. This we discussed in our earlier chapters also. I think 11th chapter somewhere we discussed in more detail. 31. Asatvadatmano nyesham bhavanam tatkrita vidham gatayoheta vaschasya vrishasvapnadrisho yatham.
Those states of existence that are conceived of as separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead have no actual existence, although they create a sense of separation from the Absolute Truth. Just as the seer of a dream imagines many different activities and rewards, similarly, because of the sense of an existence separate from the Lord's existence, the living entity falsely performs fruitive activities, thinking them to be the cause of future rewards and destinations.
Existence without Supreme Lord is not actual existence. Right? Everything is resting on Krishna. Agritayartham yat krityayata vadi nat pratiyata chadmanyam chatushloki. So whatever you see is resting on Krishna. And if one disconnects Krishna from whatever he sees, his vision is of no use. Like, you are not seeing the reality, you are seeing something else only. Right? The magician will, you know, do some magic and then, you know, bring some dollars out of newspapers. Right? And if he says, I want that newspaper, I want that dollar, I want that dollar. So if one desires for that, it's not the real currency. He can't do anything with it. Right? So if one does not have the knowledge of connection between Krishna and every object and every living entity in this entire cosmic manifestation, his vision is of not much value. His vision is useless. It's seeing that magazine papers as currency notes, like that. And see, Varnashram is there. Some people say we follow Varnashram very nicely. But Varnashram is also Ehobahya. It is also under illusion as long as it is not followed with Samsiddhir Haritoshana. Atah Pumbhir Vidashreshta Varnashram Vibhagajaha Svanishtitasya Sarmasya Samsiddhir Haritoshanam. Varnashram is rejected by Mahaprabhu if it is not connected with Krishna. Like that. So, both the rewards and the means for achieving them are ultimately illusion, as long as there is no reference to Krishna. For example, this beautiful example is given. Horns are real. Cow has horns, buffalo has horns, bull has horns, and sheep has horns. So many people have So many animals have horns. And rabbit is real. Right? There is white rabbit, there is brown rabbit, there is maybe red rabbit, I don't know. Right? But if you, in your dream, if you think that rabbit has horns, that is illusion. Horns are real. This is, rabbit is real, but rabbit doesn't have horns. Like that, you connect two different things. Similarly, the living entity dreams of a permanent relationship with the within the material world. Material world is real. Living entity is real. But living entity enjoying in this material world is unreal. Right? So if one thinks that I can get enjoyment in this material world, that is like dreaming that rabbit has horns. Like that. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, very nice. Just as one soon forgets the experience of a dream after awakening, similarly, liberated soul in Krishna consciousness does not see anything substantial in even the most exalted rewards offered by the Vedas. Svargalok, all this is all bogus, he thinks like that, a pure devotee. Because he has awakened. Somebody dreams, you know, say horrible dream or like very glorious dream, whatever, a poor fellow who doesn't have proper cloth to wear, he has, you know, 200 knots on his dhoti, right? If he sleeps and dreams that I am sitting on a throne, so many apsaras are coming and serving me, and he, when he wakes up, if he is still thinking like that, he is not intelligent, right? If he wakes up and comes to that, oh no, I am just a poor man in my small hut, right? So one has to come out of that dreamy state. A self-realized soul, a pure devotee, is a person who has come out of this conception of being a part of this material world. Right? He sees things in reality. Right? He doesn't believe in whatever this Vedas are offering also. 32nd verse. 32nd verse explains how can a soul become the master of senses. Yejagare bahirang yejahare bahiran anukshana dharminorthan भुंगते समस्त करणैर हृदि तत्सदृक्षान् स्वप्ने सुषुप्त उपसंहरते स एकः स्मृत्यन्यवात् त्रिगुणवित्तधिदृग् इन्द्रियेश
वाइल अवेक द लिविंग एंटिटी एंजॉयज विद ऑल ऑफ हिज सेंसेस the fleeting characteristics of the material body and mind. By dreaming, he enjoys similar experiences within the mind, and in deep, dreamless sleep, all such experiences merge into ignorance. By remembering and contemplating the succession of wakefulness, dreaming and deep sleep, the living entity can understand that he is one throughout the three stages of consciousness and is transcendental. Thus, he becomes the lord of the senses.
Just using little common sense and intelligence and contemplating on what all happening to me, right? Then he will be able to, you know, master the senses. He will slowly come out of the entanglement of senses. I am sleeping and I woke up, I am dreaming. So in all these three states, I am the same. I am the one and only person who is going through all these stages. Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti, right? So is there any stage beyond this? But all these are like temporary. I am unnecessarily getting caught up in this. There is a Turiya stage beyond this. With some contemplation, one will be able to understand his permanent existence through different phases. Right? And see, he may think that, oh, in dream I was like this. So some tiger was hunting me. But that was not reality. But I am the same person who was dreaming. Now, can I come out of this? Can I avoid this? How can I avoid this kind of dreamy state? Or how can I avoid this wake-up state? Then he will start thinking in those lines, then he will be able to come out of the entanglement of these three. He will become master of senses eventually, if he goes in that direction. One may argue that it is actually the senses that experience during the wakefulness, and that is the mind that experiences during dreams. Okay. However, the Lord states, Indriya Ishaha. Living entity is actually the Lord of senses and mind. Somebody may say, when I am awake, my senses are the one that are experiencing the water or this and that. And when I am sleeping, my mind is experiencing the dream. I have nothing to do. But you are the lord of those two. They should be under your control. It's not that you are under their control. Lord says, Indriya Ishaha. So the living entity is actually the lord of senses and mind, although temporarily he has become a victim of their influence.
By Krishna consciousness, one may resume one's rightful position as master of the mental and sensory faculties. Right? This is clear. Indriya Isha means one has to become lord of senses and mind, not become the servant of the senses and mind and get entangled. 33rd verse. So now here, 32nd verse, what did Krishna say? Living entity superior position over mind and senses is mentioned. Right? One has to give up that. Then 33rd verse, he says, how to cut the ego. Right? Earlier he said, spiritualize the intelligence. Then he says, master the mind and senses. Now he is saying, cut the ego. In 33rd verse. Evam vimrishya gunato manasastriyavastha manmayaya mayi krita iti nishchitartha sanchidya harda manumana sadutiktikshna jnanasina bhajatama akhila samyadadhim samshayadhim.
You should consider how by the influence of my illusory energy these three states of the mind caused by the modes of nature have been artificially imagined to exist in me. Having definitely ascertained the truth of the soul, you should utilize the sharpened sword of knowledge acquired by logical reflection and from the instructions of sages and Vedic literatures to completely cut off the false ego, which is the breeding ground of all doubts. All of you should then worship me, who am situated within the heart.
Okay. So because of Lord's Maya only, living entity is identifying himself with these three states. Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti. So one has to take the knowledge. Jnana Asina. Jnana Asina means the sword of knowledge one has to take. Bhajata. Bhajata here is refers to devotional service. Ma Akhila Samshayadhim. So one has to cut the doubts which are caused by false ego. Samshaya Adhim. Adhim means the cause. So Samshaya Adhim, the cause of all doubts is this false ego. Right, one has to cut it out. So, having definitely ascertained the truth of the soul, utilize this sword of knowledge acquired by logical reflection and instructions of sages and Vedic literatures. So, one has to learn, one has to hear from devotees and scriptures and reflect himself also. One has to contemplate. So, by all this, one has to sharpen the sword of knowledge and cut the false ego. So cut the false ego, cut the mentality of being the enjoyer and doer. 34th verse. Iksheta vibhrama idam manaso vilasam drishtam vinashtamati lokamalata chakram vijnanamekamurudheva vibhati maya Svapnastridha guna visarga krito vikalpa.
One should see that the material world is a distinct illusion appearing in the mind, because material objects have an extremely flickering existence and are here today and gone tomorrow. They can be compared to the streaking red line created by whirling a fiery stick.
You take the fire, a thread is there. You just take some fire there, you just do like this. It becomes a circle of fire. Or there is a stick also. You do chakra like Vishnu Sudarshan chakra. Somebody just rotates. It's like that.
The spirit soul by nature exists in the single state of pure consciousness. However, in this world, he appears in many different forms and stages of existence. The modes of nature divide the soul's consciousness into normal wakefulness, dreaming and dreamless sleep. All such varieties of perception, however, are actually maya and exist only like a dream.
Varieties of perception are just maya. So material world is a distinct illusion appearing in the mind. Right? It's there now, it's gone later. Right? It's just like that. So different modes are creating different types of consciousness and perceptions. They are all manaso vilasam. Manaso vilasam indicates material mind is jumping like a frog superficially from one conception of life to another conception. Again, yesterday also Gauram Prabhu was mentioning, right, we feel that if I'm in this location, I'll be happy. If I'm in this service, I'll be happy. If I'm with that devotee, I'll be happy. If I'm in this department, I'll be happy. If I'm doing this, I'm happy. It's like mind is constantly planning, scheming. Grass on the other side is always green, right? So many varieties of conceptions and perceptions only, right? But ultimate reality, one is not coming to. So whenever there is some confusion, we need to come back to basics, the basics of the material world. Right. So therefore, one should carefully study the flickering, here today, gone tomorrow, nature of the material world, and detach oneself from the illusory variety of Maya. 35th verse. Drishtim tata pratinivritya nivritta trishna tushnim bhaven nija sukhanu bhavo niriha Sandrishyate kvacha edijdam avastu buddhya Tyaktam bhramaya nabhavet smritira nipyatat.
Having understood the temporary illusory nature of material things, and thus having pulled one's vision away from illusion, one should remain without material desires. By experiencing the happiness of the soul, one should give up material speaking and activities. If sometimes one must observe the material world, one should remember that it is not ultimate reality and therefore one has given it up. By such constant remembrance, up till the time of death, one will not again fall into illusion.
So much of no, do, don'ts are mentioned here, right? Avastu buddhya. Right? Avastu buddhya means you say, you understand the temporariness or the futility of this, substances in this material world. Niriha, you become without material activities. Tyaktvam bhramaya, you give up that illusion. So many don'ts are mentioned. If you see the purport, all this one has to give up and do what? Remember that. One has to remember that material world is not actual reality, all these are there. But then do what? That is Krishna consciousness. Right? Don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. Don't do what? Do devotional service. Right? If you focus so much on the don'ts only and not focus on do's, then it's not complete. So now, purports are very important for our understanding of Bhagavatam, because the original text is in a certain logical flow. Once you understand the whole text, you will get the conclusions, right? But Kali Yuga readers may not have patience to read from beginning to end. Okay, they may begin, they may end in the middle only. They begin in the middle, and they may not reach the end only, and they may see the end only. So many things are there. But purports means they repeat the conclusions. How many times this word, one has to do devotional service, one has to become Krishna consciousness, just came in this small section several times. There is a conclusion that Krishna wants to give. So Prabhupada is an expert, SEO expert. SEO is search engine optimization. You see, in the websites, you should place some keywords exactly in your web pages, so that when someone types in Google, the web page just comes up like that. Right? So Prabhupada is like expert. He places bhakti, Krishna consciousness, devotional service, hearing, chanting. He is just spread throughout. He repeats. Right? The keyword of your article, web article, should repeat, at least, a couple of times, say 10 times in the article, for the article to be identified for that keyword. So Prabhupada uses that technique. And Prabhupada's disciples are also following very nicely in that. So the living entity, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, the living entity, while living in the external energy of the Lord, should give up the anxiety for sense gratification and should not act for his personal enjoyment. Rather, one should search out the spiritual bliss. What is this? Rishabhadev's first verse. Brahma Sukham Nayam Deho Deha Bhajam Raloki. So that is this. Deham Nanashwaram Avasthitam Utthitam Va Siddho na pashyati yato adhyagamat swarupam. Daiva adapetam atha daiva vashad upetam. Vaso yatha parikritam madira madandha.
Just as a drunken man does not notice if he is wearing his coat or shirt, similarly, one who is perfect in self-realization and who has thus achieved his eternal identity does not notice whether the temporary body is sitting or standing. Indeed, if by God's will the body is finished or if by God's will he obtains a new body, a self-realized soul does not notice, just as a drunken man does not notice the situation of his outward dress.
Somebody is PK, totally. So then, he cannot, drunken man cannot realize whether he is wearing dress or where is he sitting, he is in his house or where he is in his college or where he is, he is not aware of the external circumstances. Similarly, when he is so much absorbed in Krishna consciousness, right, he is such a self-realized soul, he has totally disconnected himself from the subtle and gross bodily functions and the functions of this material modes and material nature, then he is not bothered, he is indifferent to the functionings of this world. So, Jada Bharat is there, someone, you know, beats him, someone doesn't feed him, someone ridicules him, hot, cold, it doesn't matter to him at all. Someone just picks him up, come, you go and work in the field, he goes. Someone says, I will give you Bali to Kali, come, he will just go. Someone says, Palki mein, there is not one person is less, you come and, you know, take this Palki, he just goes, like that. Vritrasura, when he was being killed, he was in his absorption. Vritrasura was thinking that, I have to fight, right, and this fellow Indra is not fighting. Now I have to encourage him to fight and then fight with him. So he encouraged him to fight. He gave him a big class, just like Krishna gave him, you know, class on the battlefield to Arjuna, you fight, similarly Vritrasura gave class to Indra, you fight, then he fought. So then eventually Indra cut his one arm, then second arm, then the legs, and he doesn't have anything to fight with, he has only one mouth. He swallowed Indra and then went into Yoga Nidra. He just meditated on Sankarsana. That's all. What's happening to his body, he just cannot understand. So Indra had to take 1 year to cut his throat slowly, but he was in his trance. Like that. They become indifferent. When he's so absorbed in Krishna, they become indifferent to what happens to this external body, subtle body, gross body. All this, they are indifferent. The liberated soul does not, however, inflict punishment on the body, but rather remains neutral, naturally accepting his destiny as the will of the Supreme. One thing, becoming indifferent to the body does not mean punishing the body. That also comes next. He doesn't voluntarily go, I am indifferent to the body, I am not attached to the body, let me commit suicide. Not like that. Jada Bharat was not committing suicide. He was indifferent. Like that. Whatever comes on his own accord, he takes. Someone gives him rice, which is burnt from bottom. Right? Rice is white. Okay? But he is getting brown rice, which is not organic rice, which is just, you know, burnt by the fire. If somebody gives that, he just eats it. Whatever comes, I will do. Someone engages in this service, I will do that service. Like that. 37th verse. Deho api daiva vashaga khalu karma yavat svarambhakam pratisamikshata eva sashu tam saprapricham adhiruda samadhi yoga svapnam punarna bhajate pratibuddha vastu.
The material body certainly moves under the control of supreme destiny and therefore must continue to live along with its senses and vital air as long as one's karma is in effect. A self-realized soul, however, who is awakened to the absolute reality and who is thus highly situated in the perfect stage of yoga will never again surrender to the material body, and its manifold manifestations, knowing it to be just like a body visualized in a dream.
Mm. So one has to continue to live as long as one's karma exists. Karma is in effect. So Jadabharat, beautiful example. So Jadabharat was not artificially trying to, you know, end his life or do something. Right? He is just going by the flow of whatever comes to him according to the will of the Lord. When he was carrying the palanquin of Rahugana, what he was thinking was, I am just exhausting my prarabdha karmas. Right? That was his consciousness while engaging. So, I have certain stock of karma, let me just exhaust it. Let me continue. So, Krishna gave me this birth, that was never in my control. So, I will just continue like this. That was his mentality, Jadabharata, Vritrasa, whoever. So, one should not foolishly starve or injure the body, but should patiently wait until the chain of one's previous fruitive work has completely exhausted itself. So, one should not invite death. One should accept death naturally when it comes. If a Krishna conscious person pays proper attention to the maintenance of the body, is there a danger of getting attached to it? That is the question. Krishna says that one who is highly advanced in Krishna consciousness, having understood Krishna to be actual vastu or reality, never again surrenders to the illusory identification with the material body, which is just like the dream, which is like a body seen in a dream. So, focus is not an austerity. Focus is not an, inflicting suffering on this body and, safeguarding oneself from being attached to the body. That was never the focus. Do the needful and be Krishna conscious. That's what Krishna is saying. Right? Someone says, "Hari, if I again focus on maintenance of the body, will I get entangled? Will I get attached to the body?" He says, "If you just understand Krishna, then that will not bother you." That's what Brahmaji says, Priyavrat also. "Hari, I may get attached to this household life." He says, as long as one is Krishna conscious, one will not be affected by household life or whatever. Right? Having understood that Lord Krishna is the actual vastu or reality and surrendered, then he will not be caught by illusion. That's why one can have some desires for self-preservation, but that will never put him out of the realm of pure devotional service. Anya abhilashita sunyam, not anya abhilasha sunyam. Abhilashita sunyam means one can have desires for eating, taking some prasad, or just walking as an exercise or whatever. All those one has to do. Okay? But that will not put him out of the realm of pure devotional service. There is never an overemphasis on these auxiliary items of devotional service. The primary quality is madashrayaha, taking shelter of Krishna, exclusively surrendering to Krishna. All other qualities will follow. So now, Krishna, Hamsavatar, answered this question, how to disconnect one's mind from material sense objects. Now he is coming to another question. Who are you? They ask, who are you also, right? So first, Ko Bhavan iti. So now he is answering that question also. After giving an intellectual reply and then just shaking them, and then giving their answer to the original question, he is answering another question, the main question that they asked. That is, who are you? My dear Brahmanas, I will read the verse also. Mayaitad uktam o vipra guhyam yat sankhya yoga yoha janitam agatam yajnam yushmam dharma vivakshaya aham yogasya sankhyasya satyasya artasya tejasa Parayanam dvija sreshtah Shriya kirti ardamasya cha.
My dear Brahmanas, I have now explained to you the confidential knowledge of Sankhya, by which one philosophically distinguishes matter from spirit, and of Ashtanga Yoga, by which one links up with the Supreme. Please understand that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, and that I have appeared before you desiring to explain your actual religious duties. O best of the Brahmanas, please know that I am the Supreme Shelter of the Yoga system, analytic philosophy, virtuous actions, truthful religious principles, power, beauty, fame, and self-control.
Hmm. So, sometimes in the movies, the hero is introduced first. After the whole movie, the hero comes and says, my name is so-and-so. Like that. So, after discussing, the purpose of his coming there is to answer this question. After accomplishing this task completely and just before leaving, by the way, I am Vishnu. And then he left. So that's what he says. Finally. And there could be one more question in the minds of these Kumaras. Oh, you are Vishnu, right? And you are claiming to be the answerer of this question, right? The person who answers this question. That means there is some pride in you also. They may think like that, right? So, to nullify those doubts also, those traces of doubts also, Lord Hamsa enumerates his qualities in the 40th verse. Right? 40th verse. Mam bhajanti guna sarve nirgunam nirapekshakam suhridam priyamatmanam samyasangadayo gunah.
All superior transcendental qualities such as being beyond the modes of nature, detached, the well-wisher, the most dear, the super soul, equally situated everywhere and free from material entanglement. All such qualities free from the transformations of material qualities find their shelter and worshipable object in me.
Hmm. Okay. So, they may, you know, detect some pride in Lord Hamsa. Oh, you just came with a, you just suddenly appeared and said, you proved the redundancy of our question, who are you? And then very philosophically analyzed the whole thing, you answered it, and then finally you are revealing that I am Vishnu. There could be some pride in that. And when a proud person makes a point, the tendency is to doubt that point. Right? When a proud person establishes, he gives a talk, and if you sense pride in him, you can't trust him completely. Right? When an honest person, a humble person speaks something, any sane person will be attracted to him and when he will trust him. But when a proud person making a point, any sane person will doubt him, his intentions like that. On the other way, demoniac people will get attracted to boasting. Right? When Kamsa says, he announces certain things, or who is that? Jarasandha. Jarasandha boasts so many things, right? All these followers like Shishupala and all those fellows, Rukmi, they get attracted to his words. But in general, proud person's words are suspected, and humble person's words are trusted, right? So, anticipating such a reluctance from the four Kumaras, Hamsa revealed what are his qualities. First, he said, "I am Nirgunam. I am beyond the modes of nature." Second, nirapeksham. Nirapeksham means I am the Lord completely ignores the so-called enjoyment offered by the illusory energy. That's why he is called nirapeksham. This word nirapeksha comes in Chaitanya Charitamrita when Mahaprabhu goes to Shantipur. After taking sannyas, he comes to Shantipur. He actually wanted to go to Vrindavan, and Nityanand Prabhu expertly diverts him. He shows Ganga and says, "This is Yamuna." And then he goes. Then Mahaprabhu says, "Chidananda Bhano, Sadananda Suno, Paraprema Patri," that beautiful verses are come. He comes to Shantipur, he stays for a while, and he gets instruction from Shanti, Mother Sachi, and then he was going towards Jagannathpuri. Then again, devotees request him, "Stay back for some more time." Then he stayed for some time. 3 more days, I think. Then again he goes. Then Advaita Acharya was following with weeping, he is shedding so many tears. Advaita Acharya was following him. Then Lord Chaitanya says, "If you cry, who will console them? Go back." Still Advaita Acharya was unable to give up, right? He was feeling separation. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu silently, nirapeksham,
with being completely indifferent to the tears of Advaitacharya and all the people who are crying in separation from him, he just left over Jagannath Puri. There in the context, Prabhupada writes, you know, great souls are harder than thunderbolt and softer than rose, right? And nirapeksha is an important quality for renunciant, right? So all that he mentions. Okay, he is nirapeksha. Then he is sauhurdam, he is the well-wisher of everyone. He is priyam, he is the dearmost lovable object of everyone. Right, he has affectionate relationships with everyone. That's why he is called priyam sauhurdam. Then samya indicates that the Lord is neutral and detached from material situations. These are all exalted qualities. Find their shelter and worshipable object in the Lord, who does not take material designations into consideration, but awards his mercy to anyone who takes shelter of him. Right? All these exalted qualities find their shelter in the Lord. It's not mentioned that Lord is possessing these qualities, or the Lord is a possessor, or Lord is endowed with these qualities. No. All these qualities took shelter of Lord's personality. If you remember 5th canto, when Hanumanji is being glorified by Lord Ram, he glorifies him as touchstone. Right? Sadhu vada nikashanam. Okay, that is touchstone. Right? Lord Ram verifies all good qualities. When Lord Ram exhibits the qualities, qualities are glorified. Not that Lord Ram is glorified. It's the glory of the quality that Lord Ram exhibited that quality. Okay? Lord Ram exhibited the quality of a righteous husband. So the quality of being a chaste husband, righteous husband, a righteous king, that is being glorified. Because Lord Ram exhibited it. Right? It's not that Lord Ram becomes glorified just because he was an ideal husband or ideal king. Like that. Param padam bhushana bhushanangam. Okay, when Krishna wears ornaments, ornament is glorified, not Krishna. Krishna is anyways beautiful. It's the glory or the beauty of the ornament, fortune of the ornament that Krishna picked it up and then put it on his head. Like that. Abhirama gunakara dasharadhi. He is gunakara. He is the reservoir of all qualities. Okay. So all the demigods would come and worship Lord to get some qualities like this. But Lord, the Supreme Lord, simultaneously is free from all material qualities and completely endowed with all transcendental qualities. Okay, he is not just zero, he is positive. He is not negative, he is not zero, he is positive. It's not that he is devoid of material qualities. He is endowed, he is full of transcendental qualities also. So Krishna, Hamsa establishes that I have these qualities. So don't consider what I said, what the whole discourse I give is not out of pride or just to show off. Right? I have substance. I am Supreme Lord. He just said it. And now he's going. 41st verse. Thus all the doubts of the sages headed by Sanaka were destroyed by my words. Fully worshipping me with transcendental love and devotion, they chanted my glories with excellent hymns. The greatest sages headed by Sanaka Rishi thus perfectly worshipped and glorified me, and as Lord Brahma looked on, I returned to my abode. 115. Can we continue till say 2 o'clock or whatever? We'll take some 5 minutes break and continue. At least in half of this chapter we should finish.
Hare Krishna. He says in deep sleep, the only soul is ignorance. Only soul is active, and senses and mind are totally inactive. He is asking, is that the case? Where mind is totally inactive and senses are also inactive. Now, in the 14th chapter, Uddhava asks a question. Sri Uddhava Uvacha, Vadanti Krishna Sreyamsi, Bahuvani Brahmavadina, Tesham Vikalpa Pradhanyam, Utaho Eka Mukhyata.
Sri Uddhava said, My dear Krishna, the learned sages who explain Vedic literature recommend various processes for perfecting one's life. Considering these varieties of viewpoint, my Lord, please tell me whether all these processes are equally important or whether one of them is supreme.
Now there are so many processes, so many sadhanas to attain sadhya. So is there any supreme sadhana? Is there any supreme process? Amongst all these processes, or all these processes are equally important? So he is asking like that. What is the supreme process for self-realization? That was his question. So not all Vedic processes lead directly to the ultimate goal, pure love of God. Some only gradually elevate the consciousness of the living entity. Right? For the purpose of giving a general outline of process of self-realization, sages may discuss various other methods. But when the time comes to ascertain the most perfect process, secondary methods have to be cleared from the path. Okay. Now the king is coming. All of you just go out. Okay. The whole theme of the entire chapter is this only. Proving why all this kind of different kinds of methods came into existence. Krishna says that first. Then he establishes the supremacy of the devotional service. It's a very beautiful chapter glorifying bhakti like anything. And several important verses glorifying bhakti yoga come from this section. So, yeah, second verse.
Bhavatoda hrita swamin bhakti yoga anapekshita nirasya sarvata sangam
Yena Tvaya Vishen Manaha. My dear Lord, you have clearly explained the process of unalloyed devotional service, by which a devotee removes all material association from his life, enabling him to fix his mind on you.
He says, you explained very clearly this bhakti yoga, nirapekshita bhakti yoga. The three qualities of that bhakti yoga are mentioned in this verse. Bhakti yoga, anapekshita, not nirapekshita, anapekshita. Anapekshita means unalloyed, without having any desires, material desires. Then second, nirasya sarvata sangam. Means that removes all sarvataha sangam, all material association completely removes in all respects. Then yena tvai avishen manaha, yena tvai avishen manaha, by practicing which you will stay in our minds, right? Enabling us to fix yourself, Krishna, in our minds. That is that bhakti yoga that you have mentioned nicely, right? So pure devotional service, he is the supreme process for fixing the mind on Krishna, like that. Now the question is, can everyone practice that or not? Right? Or is it limited to certain class of transcendentalists only? So in discussing the relative advantages of different spiritual processes, one must immediately ascertain the goal of spiritual life and then isolate the process that actually awards this goal. So what is the final goal? What is the supreme sadhya goal, and what are all the different sadhanas, and amongst all these sadhanas which is the best sadhana, right? So now Uddhava is asking Krishna. The purport is very beautiful. There are different methods for perfection, right? So there is a primary aspect of it, that is, primary one is that gives highest perfection. Then there is a secondary, auxiliary thing. He is the one which enhances the experience of the primary one. The method that gives one the highest perfection is primary, and whereas other processes merely assist or enhance the primary function is the secondary one. For example, Varnashram is a secondary thing. It facilitates for the good practice of devotional service, but it is not the primary one. It's like that. There is a primary thing, there is a secondary thing. Like that. So primary thing is prasad. Then secondary thing is the plate. Whether you eat in golden plate or silver plate or paper plate or patal, whatever. Ultimately the what falling in the plate should be more exciting. Like that. Now Krishna is answering these questions. Now the very important, beautiful question that there are different processes to attain one goal, which is the best of all these processes. Now, one, by this inquiry we can understand that one has to place this kind of inquiries in front of a self-realized soul, a knowledgeable devotee or Krishna, like Uddhava is doing. If he tries to figure out what is the ultimate process on his own, he will not be able to figure out. We have this example in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Tapan Mishra, he was living in Bangladesh, right? When Lord Chaitanya met Tapan Mishra in Bangladesh, he was trying to figure out what is the supreme sadhana, which is supreme sadhya. Then he read so many books, but he was unable to figure out. So Lord Chaitanya told him, supreme sadhana is chanting the holy names, and supreme sadhya is attaining love of Godhead. Then why you are unable to figure out? I read so many books. That is the problem. You read so many books, that's why you are unable to figure out. Right? So one should not read so many books in a pursuit of developing so much information. Right? But one can deepen his understanding of Krishna's attributes, Nama, Rupa, Guna, Lila, by reading so many books. In that sense, it is encouraged. But one should not unnecessarily become a bookworm. In regards to the scriptures which talk about bhakti, even if you are reading a bhakti scripture also, a step-by-step procedure is important. Right? Okay, you got, okay, ultimately Bhagavatam is the pramanam. Srimad Bhagavatam pramanam avalam yad Vaishnavanam priyam. We hear this and then we understand Bhagavatam. Within Bhagavatam also we cannot read haphazardly. Right? A step-by-step process is recommended to nicely understand what the book is intending to offer to the reader. Like that. So Uddhava is here asking the topmost sadhana, and can everyone practice that sadhana or not? Like that. Because on one's own, one will not be able to figure out what is the supreme sadhana. Now Krishna is responding. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Kalena Nashta Pralaye Vaniyam Veda Samhita Mayadau Brahmane Prokta Dharmo Yasya Madatmaka.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, by the influence of the time, the transcendental sound of Vedic knowledge was lost at the time of annihilation. Therefore, when the subsequent creation took place, I spoke the Vedic knowledge to Brahma because I myself am the religious principle enunciated in the Vedas.
So, by the influence of time, this Vedic knowledge was lost. Then again I spoke this to Brahma. This is something similar to Bhagavad Gita 4.2. What is that? Evam parampara praptam, evam rajarshayo vidhi. So it was lost, something similar. And finally Krishna also says, dharmo yasya madatmakaha, because the religious principles enunciated in the Vedas is myself. I myself am the religious principles. Vedaischa sarvai rahameva vedyo vedanta krit veda videva chaham. Right, I am the compiler of Vedanta. I am the speaker of Vedanta. By studying all Vedas, I am to be known. Right? The conclusion of Vedas is Krishna. So he says that. And see this line. Lord Krishna explains to Uddhava that although many processes and concepts of spiritual realization are described in Vedas, the Vedas ultimately recommend devotional service. All philosophy arises from Vedas, and the purport of Vedas is bhakti. The essence of Vedas is bhakti. The essence is that Haladini Shakti. Like that. So one who has not developed his attraction to Lord Krishna cannot restrain the senses from inferior engagements. So one has to engage in bhakti. So but one whose senses and mind are entangled in sense gratification and mental speculation, and whose heart is therefore covered by material lust, cannot directly receive the transcendental Vedic messages. So now, Vedic message is there. If the essence of Vedas is bhakti, if bhakti is what is recommended in the Vedas, there are so many people who are studying the Vedas, but why are they not doing bhakti? Right? Why everyone is not able to catch that essence? Because mind is covered by the clouds of mental speculation. So the son of bhakti or son of Krishna is not getting revealed to them. When the mind is devoid of those mental speculations, when the blue sky of Krishna consciousness manifests, then one can see Krishna. Fourth verse.
Tena prokta svaputraya manave purvajayasa tato bhrgvadayo grihnan sapta brahma maharshayah.
Lord Brahma spoke this Vedic knowledge to his eldest son, Manu, and the seven great sages headed by Bhrigu Muni then accepted the same knowledge from Manu.
So he is giving the parampara. Third verse he said, I spoke to Brahma. And now in this verse he says, Brahma spoke to Manu, Manu spoke to the seven sages headed by Bhrigu, and that's how the parampara continues. He said like that. Then, everyone engages in a certain way of life based on one's own nature and propensities. But bhakti yoga is the natural activity of one whose nature is completely purified by the association of Supreme Lord. The natural activity of every soul is bhakti, is to perform bhakti, but that is covered for certain reasons because of this contamination of material energy. So one becomes completely purified of this by the association of devotees, etc. Then he will naturally perform that bhakti yoga. So other processes are meant for those whose nature is still affected by material modes. And thus, such processes along with their results are themselves also materially contaminated. For devotional service is pure spiritual process. There are many other processes. As Uddhava is saying, there are so many processes. What is the supreme process?
supreme process is bhakti. Even in 21st verse of this chapter also, Krishna says, bhaktyaham ekaya grahya. You can attain me only by bhakti. Now discussion is closed. Chapter can end at the 4th verse only. But Krishna wants to give more elaboration. Uddhava says, if you say bhakti is the supreme, then why all other processes are existing? Then he answered from the 5th verse onwards. Right? So, anartha upashamam sakshat bhakti yoga madokshaje lokasya ajanato vidvam chakre sattvasa samhitam. So, to come out of all this material contamination, anartha upashamam sakshat bhakti yoga madokshaje, performing devotional service to adhokshaja, Krishna, is the only way to come out of this material existence. And people don't know this. That's why Mahamuni Vyasadeva compiled this Bhagavatam. So he said like this. So other processes are meant for people who are contaminated by modes of existence. Like that. Now, if you see, there are no super soul meditators in the spiritual world. There are no impersonalists in the material, in the spiritual world. There are only devotees in the spiritual world. Means, the process of bhakti, this bhakti yoga, is eternal. It's there in the spiritual world also. Now when in the material world also you perform that bhakti yoga, then it's as good as being in the spiritual world. Right? But if one is practicing this this impersonalistic path or this ashtanga yoga or what is that, super soul meditation, all this, no? They don't exist in the spiritual world, that means they are not eternal processes. You see, this jnana, karma, yoga, ashtanga, they are not eternal processes. They are processes that are being followed only in the material world. That establishes the supremacy of bhakti yoga, the simple fact. There are devotees in the spiritual world, but are they impersonalists? Are they brahmavadis? Are they jnanis? No. There are gopis, there are gopas, they are all bhaktas. Like that. 5th to 7th verse. Can someone read the translations?
Forefather headed by Bhrigu Muni and other sons of Brahma appeared many children and descendants who assumed different forms as demigods, demons, human beings, Guhyakas, Siddhas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Charanas, King Devas, Kinnaras, Nagas, Kimpurushas and so on. All of the many universal species along with their respective leader appeared with different nature and desire generated from the three modes of material nature. Therefore, because of the different characteristics of the living entities within the universe, there are a great many Vedic rituals, mantras and rewards.
Because there are different characteristics of living entities, there are different processes, different rituals, different mantras, different rewards. Right? Different kinds of mantras. If there is one mantra, Hare Krishna is sufficient, why there are so many mantras? Someone will argue. There are people with different mentalities, that's why there are different mantras. Right? So, people think that, see, originality means, you know, finding you know, some insight which no one has ever proposed, no one has ever you know, thought of. Right? That means originality. This is original design. Means no one has ever done this design. It's like that. People think that originality means it should have an origin from him. But originality has another meaning, which means it is as close as possible to the origin. Right? Origin is Krishna. So Krishna says, Aham adirhi devana maharshinam cha sarvasaha. Okay? Here, Krishna is the source of all demigods and sages. And who is there in the parampara? The most prominent demigod, Brahmaji. And later, it's coming through sages and all these people. So, he is the origin of all of them. And as an origin of all of them, Krishna is giving them the original knowledge also. And when the knowledge is preserved and passed to the next generations as it was coming from Krishna, original, then that is original knowledge. When it is manipulated, then it loses its originality. Okay? And people claim that manipulated thing as original, and what is coming from Krishna is not original. It is copied, copy-paste. Copy-paste is original. Right? If you type your own thing, that is not original. Okay? So that is the point here. Because there are different mentalities, different characteristics of living entities, different processes and mantras just came up. Okay? They have origins in some temporary sources. But what Krishna spoke is permanent.
So why Vedic literatures recommend so many different methods of worship and advancement? Answer is here. So Bhrugu, Marichi, Atri, Angira, Pulascha, Pulaha, Kratu. They are forefathers of the universe and they spoke so many things according to people. And there are Kindevas, Kinnaras, Kimpurushas, etc. So who are they? Why are they called so? Is given in the purport. Kimpurushas. So these people have forms almost similar to human beings. By seeing them, one will wonder, are they human beings? That is Kim Purusha. That's why they are called Kim Purushas. Like that. Nara, Vanara. They almost look like Naras. So all those are there. So now, in the last paragraph, this proliferation of Vedic formulas indicates only the variety of material illusion and not a variety of ultimate purpose. Ultimate purpose of Vedas is to develop love of Godhead. Ultimate source of Vedas is Krishna. Ultimate conclusion of the Vedas is Krishna Bhakti. But there are different processes that only shows deviation from this ultimate purpose. Deviation from this ultimate goal. Okay, they show a varieties of illusion only, not varieties of ultimate purpose. Ultimate purpose is only one. Ultimate purpose is only one, not many. Like that. The ultimate purpose is to know and love Krishna. 8th verse. Evam prakriti vaichityad vidyante matayon runam paramparyena kenaschit keshanchit pashanda matayo pare.
Thus, due to the great variety of desires and natures among human beings, there are many different theistic philosophies of life which are headed down through tradition, custom and disciplic succession. There are other teachers who directly support atheistic viewpoint.
So, different desires are there, different natures are there, that's why there are different paths. That's why there is a variety in paths. That's what this beautiful verse also says. So, His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj says that material world is nothing but varieties of ways of rebelling against Krishna. Right? And spiritual world means varieties of ways of serving Krishna. Spiritual world, there are varieties of serving Krishna, services of Krishna. Here, varieties of rebelling against Krishna. So, that's why there are different paths. There are different rasas there, different kinds of devotees there. Here, there are different types of rebellions. Some say there is no God. Some say there is. Some say God is dead. Some say God has no form. Some say God has no name. Like that. So, different few things are coming. If you do not perform Leela Kirtan, people think Anartha Nivritti is the ultimate goal. But our real goal is Artha Pravritti. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says like this. If you do not understand this, one will again fall into impersonalism.
So, there are varieties in spiritual world also. For example, Krishna gifted a flower, Parijata flower, to Rukmini Devi. Then Fatima became angry. Then Krishna got Parijata tree for Satyabhama and gave. Rukmini did not become angry. So Krishna's wives are of different flavor. There is variety there also. And there is variety here also. For example, Gadadhar Pandit is there. He was hearing Bhagavatam from Vallabhacharya, which Mahaprabhu was not very much happy with. Right? Apparently. Mahaprabhu definitely understands the mood of Gadadhar Pandit out of his simplicity and some etiquette and respect only he was hearing. It's not that he wants to violate the instructions of Mahaprabhu by hearing from someone who is not approved by Mahaprabhu. But Mahaprabhu was purposely not reciprocating with Gadadhar Pandit only to make him angry and retaliate. But Gadadhar Pandit never retaliates, never becomes angry. Mahaprabhu failed. Like that. So there is a different mood. On the other hand, we have Jagadananda Pandit. Right? You take this special oil. Then Mahaprabhu says, no, no, I can't. Then he just goes into Manlila and, fasts for 3 days. Mahaprabhu had to eat feast to break her fast, break his fast, break Jagadananda Pandit's fast. So there are varieties there also.
So all these differences are there to be respected and to be celebrated, not to impose the ideas of one person on another person. So there are differences in the spiritual circles also. There are different paths in the material circles also. But all the differences and varieties in the spiritual circles are meant for the ultimate purpose of love of Godhead. But there, it's a deviation from ultimate purpose. Like that.
So here this analogy is given. There is water in the Ganges. On the bank of Ganges, there could be some flower trees, there could be some fruit trees, there could be some poisonous trees. All of them are drawing water from Ganges only. But some are giving poisonous fruits, some are giving, you know, beautiful flowers, fragrant flowers, some are giving, you know, some nice fruits, etc. All are taking this from the, you know, Ganges only, water only. Similarly, Vedas are there, but different people are interpreting the Vedas in different ways. That's why different concocted paths are coming. Like that. So Prabhupada gives this popular example of electricity. Electric energy is there, you can manipulate it to make things cold, to make things hot, to generate light, to generate air, all this you can use. Electricity is same. Similarly, Vedas are the same, but people are utilizing in different ways. Those who are atheistic or demoniac utilize their association with Vedic knowledge to produce the poisonous fruits of atheistic or materialistic philosophy. 9th verse. Banmaya mohita dhiya purushah purusharshabham shreyo vadanchane kantam yatha karma yatha ruchi.
Oh, best among men, the intelligence of human being is bewildered by my illusionary potency, and thus according to their own activities and whims, they speak in innumerable ways about what is actually good for people.
Okay, man maya mohita dhiya. Mohita dhiya, because of the bewilderment caused by my own energy, with those bewildered intelligence, people create different paths. Right? According to one's individual way of doing things, yatha karma, and one's individual preference, yatha ruchi, one speaks about others, what is good for them. Right? Man maya mohita dhiya purushah purusharshabha shreyo vadanti anekatman yatha karma yatha ruchi. And interestingly, every fellow thinks that whatever I think is correct, whatever I do is correct. And whatever I do and think, everyone should think like that, everyone should do like that. Like that is the mentality of everyone. So my way is highway, something like that. So-called learned people are whimsically advising other whimsical people who also lack perfect knowledge of the actual goal of life. This is the only reason for the presence of multiple paths. Otherwise, purpose is one. 10th verse. Krishna speaks further on different paths. Can some? Okay, we'll read this. Dharmam eke yashas chanye kamam satyam damam shamam anye vadanti sarvartham anye vadanti swartham va aishwaryam tyaga bhojanam kechin yagnam tapodanam vratani niyaman yaman.
Some say that people will be happy by performing pious religious activities. Others say that the happiness is attained through fame, sense gratification, truthfulness, self-control, peace, self-interest, political influence, opulence, renunciation, consumption, sacrifice, penances, charity, vows, regulated duties, or strict disciplinary regulation. Each process has its proponents.
So different people emphasize on different things. Some say opulence is based, some say renunciation is based, some say consumption, penance, charity, vows. Different people emphasize different things. Only to violate the instructions of Krishna. Then what did we learn in the 5th canto, 1st chapter, from Brahmaji's talk to Priyavrat? This just reminds me of that verse. Natasya kaschit tapasa vidyayava nayoga viryena manishayava naivartha dharmaihi paratasvatova kritam vihuntum tanubhridvibhuyat. Right? Natasya kaschit tapasa vidyayava, by your austerity, by your education, na yoga, your yoga, viryena, by your physical prowess, manishayava, by your advanced intelligence, naivartha, by your money, wealth, dharmaihi, by your following of religious principles, paratasvatova, by the strength of one's own self, by the strength of others, in any means, you can never violate the injunctions of Krishna. And here Krishna is saying, by the power of opulence, renunciation, consumption, sacrifice, penance, charity, etc., people are violating my injunctions and creating different stupid paths. So Krishna is saying the cause of the existence of different paths. They exist only because of deviation from Krishna's instructions. Like that. But recommendation of Bhagavatam is not to, never to deviate from Krishna's intentions. Like that. So what are they? What are all these paths? You know, purport explains nicely. The dharmam, aka is this karma mimamsa philosophers. Right? Kamam is this, the Kama Shastra, Kama Sutra, this Vedic text, etc. You can study. So 11th. So now Krishna so far analyzed why different paths are existing, because of different mentalities, different kinds of acharyas of those mentalities, right, who influence other people, whimsical people. So what is the result of those paths? Krishna explains in the 11th verse.
Adyantavanta evaisham lokah karma vinirmitah dukkhodarkastamo nishtah Shudramandah Sucharpitah.
All the person I have just mentioned obtain temporary fruits from their material work. Indeed, the meager and miserable situation they achieve bring future unhappiness and are based on ignorance. Even while enjoying the fruits of their work, such person are filled with lamentation.
So, what is the horrible result? Even while enjoying the results of their works, they are sorrowful, lamenting. So, see the first line of the purport. Those who have grasped temporary material things, mistaking them to be ultimate reality, are not considered very intelligent except by themselves. They think themselves intelligent, but no one else will think that they are intelligent. Especially learned scholars, learned sages. Right? Neither desired nor expected. So that is the result. So Krishna established the reason for existence of various paths till the 11th verse, right? From 12th verse till 30th verse, Krishna establishes the best path, that is bhakti. Okay? This is pure glorification of bhakti yoga. Would you mind if I extend a little more? Few verses at least, half of the section we can cover.
Mayyarpitatmana sabhya nirapekshasya sarvata mayatmana sukham yattat kutasyad vishayatmanam.
O learned Uddhav, those who fix their consciousness on me, giving up all material desires, share with me a happiness that cannot possibly be experienced by those engaged in sense gratification.
Happiness in devotional service is way superior to happiness of sense gratification. Krishna established it here. So the actual purport of Vedic knowledge is explained in this verse. Vishayatmanam means people who cultivate peace of mind, sense control, self-control, speculative philosophy on a material plane. They are called Vishayatmanam, Kuyoginam. So by that one can never achieve happiness. Like that. What is that? Yatpada pankada pilasavirasa bhaktya karmashayam grishitam udghratayam tisamcha tadvanna rittamatayo yatayo piruddha srotoganastamaranam bhajavasudeva. So many other paths are there. If they are devoid of devotional service, no success. But yasya anuvrittya kritino babhu. bhavayanastvam bhavishvabhavana bhavayanastvam bhavishvabhavana tvaveva mathata suhrutpatiputa tvam sadgururna paramcha devatam yasya anuvrittya krutino bhavu. Following the injunctions of Krishna, one will attain all success. So, according to Sridhar Swami, one enjoys the happiness spoken in this verse while associating in one's own spiritual body with the supreme transcendental form of the Lord. Okay. One key word that we missed discussing was madatmakaha in the third verse. I'm sorry, I didn't mention it. This madatmakaha is very important verse, important word. Okay. You can note that. Identical with me. Third verse, last line. Okay, 13th verse. Akinchanasya dantasya shantasya samajetasa maya santushta manasaha sarvaha sukhamaya disha. Akinchanasya dantasya shantasya samajetasa maya santushta manasaha sarvaha sukhamaya disha. Who can always be happy? That is mentioned in the 13th verse.
One who does not desire anything within this world, who has achieved peace by controlling his senses, whose consciousness is equal in all conditions and whose mind is completely satisfied in me, finds only happiness wherever he goes.
Sarvaha sukhamaya disha. Disha, in whichever disha he goes, he sees only sukha. Right? Sukhamaya disha. All directions for him are filled with happiness if he has this consciousness. What is that? Akinchanasya. No other desires other than Krishna service. Dantasya. Sense control. Shantasya. Peaceful. Samachetaha. Consciousness of seeing equality everywhere. Everything is equal. Energies of Krishna. Then maya santushta manasaha. Right? His mind is completely satisfied in thinking of Krishna. Then sarvah sukhamaya disha. Wherever he goes, happy. Happiness everywhere. Seventh canto, right? Sarvah sivamaya disha. Correct. Yeah, similar verse. These sublime perceptions are certainly due to causeless mercy of Krishna. Right? Chakvartipa says, just like a wealthy man travels all over the world, at every place he stays, he always enjoys the same luxurious standard of comfort. So traveling is not an austerity for a wealthy man. He just books an AC room, just goes as good as he stay at home. Like that. Same thing. Similarly, one who has developed Krishna consciousness is never separated from happiness. Never separated from happiness. So, because Lord Krishna is all-pervading. Wherever he goes, he sees Krishna. Wherever he is with Krishna, he is happy. Like that. And 14th verse. 14th verse describes devotee's love for Lord. 15th verse describes Lord's love for devotees. Beautiful verses. Beautiful pair. Naparameshtyam namahendrajishtyam Naparameshtyam namahendradhishnyam Nasarvabhaumam narasadhipatyam Nayogasiddhir apunarbhavamva Mayyarpitatme chatimadvinanyat.
One who has fixed his consciousness on me desires neither the position or abode of Lord Brahma or Lord Indra, nor an empire or the earth, on the earth, nor sovereignty in the lower planetary system, nor the eightfold perfection of yoga, nor liberation from birth and death. Such a person desires me alone.
This is similar to Nanaka Prishtam Nachaparameshtam Vritrasur. Exactly. Nagapatnis. Kaliyas. So this comes there also. So devotee doesn't want any of these things. Desires me alone.
idam teva purnatha gopala balam tadame manasya virastam kimanyaihi. Why do you need any other benedictions? Just this beautiful form of Bal Gopal may it stay ever in my heart. Why heart? May it stay right in front of my eyes. So he just re-emphasizes his desire to be with Krishna only and repeatedly rejects all other desires. Satyavrata Muni in Damodarashtaka. Right? So he doesn't need anything else. The position of Akinchana pure devotee. He is, say, 13th verse describes Akinchana devotee. So 14th verse is elaborated. The position of Akinchana pure devotee is described in this verse. Priyavrata is an example. Right? Even the greatest material enjoyment appears most significant, insignificant and useless to a pure devotee. Like that. So Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I respond. Right? If I offer my Atma to them as well. The devotee does not desire anything except me, for I remain always perceivable by all his senses. So that is about how Krishna, how devotee loves Krishna. Now 15th verse. How Krishna loves devotee. Natathame priyatama atmayonir na shankara naca sankarshano na shrir naivatma cha yatha bhavan.
My dear Uddhav, neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Shankarshana, the goddess of fortune, nor indeed my own self are as dear to me as you are.
So you are my most dear devotee. Krishna tells Uddhava. That is the position of Uddhava. And of course, Uddhava desires for the dust of the lotus feet of all the gopis of Vrindavan. They are superior to Uddhava also. Nemam virincho na bhavo na shrirapyanga samshrayat prasadam lebhire gopi ittat prapti mukta. So devotees are also glorified in Bhagavatam so much. Like that. You see, the last section of this beautiful purport is very nice. So Madhvacharya says, the example of a gentleman. A gentleman sometimes neglects his own interest and that of his children to give charity to the poor beggar. For example, a father is going with his children to some shopping or exhibition. Right? He has some 1,000 rupees in the pocket. And the way some beggar comes. You know? He just gives that 1,000 rupees and, you know, today program cancelled. We'll go back. Like sometimes the father may compromise the enjoyment of his own self or his own children also to assist a, you know, poor person in need. Similarly, the Lord gives preference to a helpless devotee who depends completely on his mercy. The only way to obtain that Lord's mercy is through his causeless love, and the Lord is most lovingly inclined towards those devotees who are most dependent on him. Right? Just as ordinary mothers and fathers worry more about their helpless children than those who are self-sufficient. Thus, even if one lacks any material qualification, one should simply depend on the Supreme Lord without any other interest, and surely one will achieve the highest perfection of life. In another way of approaching Lord, attaining Lord's mercy is through the medium of devotees. Because Narada Muni predicted, so Krishna was obliged to give them mercy. Namo Radhikaye Sayiriya Priyaye. Right? Just approaching Krishna through Srimati Radharani. So all this. In 16th verse, one more glorification verse about the devotees. Krishna follows devotees' footsteps. Okay? What else can be more, you know, glorifying than this for the devotees? Nirapeksham munim shantam nirvairam samadarshanam anuvrajamyaham nityam puyeye changhri renubhihi.
With the dust of my devotees' lotus feet, I desire to purify the material world, which are situated within me. Thus I always follow the footstep of my pure devotees, who are free from all personal desires, wrapped in thoughts of my pastime, peaceful, without any feeling of enmity and of equal disposition everywhere.
Okay. Nirapeksham, no personal desires. Munim, thoughtful. Shantam, peaceful. Nirvairam, no envy. Samadarshanam, equanimity. Then, Anuvrajami. Anuvrajami means I follow. Anuvrajami aham. I follow them. Nityam, always. Puyeta. Puyeta is pure. Puyeta iti angri renubhi. So, I always follow in their footsteps who are always free from personal desire. I desire to purify with the dust of the lotus feet of my devotees this whole world. This is one explanation. Is Krishna purifies this world through the medium of the dust of his devotees. Janasya Krishna vimukhasya daiva tadharma shilasya sudukhitasya anugrahayeha charanti nunam bhutani bhavyani janardhanas. So, charanti nunam, when the devotees traverse on the surface of earth, earth is getting purified. Place, different places are getting purified. Mahadvicharanam drunam grihinam dena chetasam. What is it? Nishtesai Bhagavan. One more word. Nanyata Kuti. Forgetting those verses. Anyways, Nanda Maharaj tells Gargamuni, the only reason why you sages traverse on the path of, traverse on earth is, and visit our homes is, to purify others. Like that, by their dust. Vishnu tells Kumaras, I take the dust of the lotus feet, dust of the lotus feet of my devotees on my head. Who will hesitate to take it? Yatsevaya charana padma pavitra renum sadhya punati sahasam. Yatsevaya charana padma pavitra renum sadhya. Oh my god. Sadhya. Yatsevaya charana padma pavitra renum. Bro, please open that. I can't afford to forget this verse. 3.16.7 or 6. 7, I think. Yatsevaya charana padma pavitra renam. Sadhya kshata akhila malam pratilabdha shilam. Nashrir virakti mapimam videhatiyasya preksha lavarthayatare neymandra. Okay. Sadhya kshata akhila malam pratilabdha shilam. Lord has acquired such a disposition that his dust can purify everyone from all contamination of sinful activities. That is because of his service to his devotees. Yat sevaya. Because Lord is servant of his devotees, he has become so glorious. He says like that. So just as the devotees always follow in the footsteps of Lord Krishna, similarly, Lord Krishna, being a devotee of his devotees, follows the footsteps of his devotees. Krishna is devotee of his devotees. Even to Durvasa Muni also, he says so many things about his devotees. They gave everything to me. That's why I give everything to them. So Krishna, Madhvacharya says, Krishna follows in the footsteps of his devotees to purify them. So as the Lord walks along behind his pure devotees, the wind blows the dust of Lord's lotus feet in front of his devotees, who then become purified by contact with such transcendental dust. This is how Madhvacharya explains. So Lord desires to purify the universes situated within him by taking the dust of those lotus feet of pure devotees. Without the dust, without the dust of the lotus feet of the devotees, it is not possible to engage in pure devotional service. What is that verse? Rajobhishekam, Mahatpada Rajobhishekam. Exactly. Mahatpada, Vina Mahatpada Rajobhishekam. Another sloka loka here. Two people. Tavadurukramangri. So that is the glories of the dust of devotees' lotus feet. This is easier, right, to digest. You are saying the last chapter was too much, too difficult to Hamsavatar. So, Nishkinchana mayyanurakta chetasa
Shanta Mahanto Khila Jeeva Vatsalaha Kamair Analabdha Dhiyo Jushantite Yannairapekshyam Naviduh Sukham Mama.
Those who are without any desire for personal gratification, whose minds are always attached to me.
No desire for sense gratification is nishkanchana. Mayi anurakta chetasaha. Minds are attached to Krishna only. Next.
Who are peaceful.
Shanta.
Without false ego.
Mahanta.
And merciful to all living entities.
Akhila jiva vatsalaha.
And whose consciousness is never affected by opportunity for sense gratification.
Kamai analabdha. Dhiya.
Such person enjoy in me a happiness that cannot be known or achieved by those lacking such detachment from the material world.
Jushantite yan nirapeksham na viduhu sukham mama. Beautiful verse. This can be for memorization. So there are some five, six qualities mentioned. Jushanti. Jushantite, they relish, they enjoy. So Jushanti, how is it exactly translated? Experience, like that. So the pure devotees always experience the transcendental bliss in their service to Krishna. So pure devotees always desire to give Krishna conscious happiness to all others. That is this akhila jiva vatsala. This compassion is a very beautiful quality that is there. So the devotee never wants to restrict this jushanti experience for himself or some close circle of people. He wants to give it to everyone. Today we were reading in Leelamrit in morning meal. When Prabhupada entered Vrindavan, he was thinking this Vrindavan, people want to live in Vrindavan, die in Vrindavan, they don't want even to go to Mathura also. But Prabhupada entered Vrindavan, he is contemplating on how people should get this experience of Vrindavan. Okay, in the Western world, people don't even know what it means to live without sense gratification. They never heard the name Krishna. They never heard the name Vrindavan. I want to give this Vrindavan experience to everyone. That is this akhila jiva vatsalaha. Compassion. Okay, Mahanta. In the course of devotee's service, many opportunities for sense gratification arise. But a pure devotee is not tempted or attracted and does not fall down from his exalted transcendental position. Okay, no temptations. Mainaka comes and gives mountain, take this, please rest for a while. Hanuman says, thank you, I want to go ahead. Badhyamano api madbhakto vishayair ajitendriya prayah pragalbhaya bhaktya vishayair nabhi bhuyate. So not having fully conquered his senses, my devotee may be harassed by material desires. But because of his unflinching devotion to me, he will not be defeated by sense gratification. Right? This is another important encouraging, hope-giving verse. Badhyamanopi mad bhakto. Right? Vishayer ajitendriya. Badhyamanopi, even if he is harassed by what? Vishayer ajitendriya. By the unconquered senses, by the tendency to enjoy materially, if he is tormented by those desires also, still, prayaha, pragalbhaya bhaktya vishayair nabhipadyate. If he is dedicated to me, if he has unflinching devotion to me, bhaktya, then he will not be defeated by sense gratification. So this refers to a accidental indulgence in some sense gratificatory activity, not a purposeful, premeditated, planned indulgence in sense gratification. If someone accidentally slips, right, then no, bhakti will protect him, Krishna will protect him, right? Because of previous bad habits or some other things, if there is some deviation in his practice of devotional service. But if he is sincere, if he wants to get up, then he can go ahead. In 2007, that was the first Vyas Puja I ever attended, Raghunathaswami Maharaj's Vyas Puja. There he was saying, there are two types of pure devotees. One pure devotee is actually very, he is pure devotee. He's pure in his intentions, in his character and everything. Another pure devotee is one who is trying to become pure devotee. Who is endeavoring sincerely to become a pure devotee, he is also considered a pure devotee. Like that. So, means a willingness to follow this rigorous process of devotional service, right? And a dedication to Krishna, a sincerity in his purpose, that's what Krishna sees, right? Because of the previous bad habits or something like that, if someone has some little discrepancies in his practice, then Krishna overlooks them and tries to help them and lifts him up, like that. That is not considered hypocrisy or duplicity. It is duplicity or hypocrisy only when, on the strength of devotional service, he commits some sinful activities. Right? If he accidentally commits some mistakes and then, I committed a mistake, okay, let me go, then that's a different thing. So, it's like sadhana bhakti is like that only. Just like somebody is learning walking, he is walking, and he is unable to walk and he slips and falls off. Then he again attempts, he tries to again get up and then again walks. Right? Again he falls. Then he again gets up and then walks. That is an attempt. There is an endeavor to improve. As long as that willingness is there, so Krishna protects him. But if he purposefully is falling, then that is hypocrisy. So this is Pragalbhaya Bhaktya. Right? Pragalbhya Bhaktya, effective and strong bhakti, that refers to an intention to practice sincerely, not a premeditated deviation like that. Two examples are given. A great warrior is there. He is trying to fight and win the battle, but sometimes he is struck by weapons of opposite people. Right? He is getting injured. Again, still with determination he is fighting. One day he will attain success if he continues to do like that. That is warrior example. That is medicine example. He accepts. Similarly, one may contact a serious disease, but if he takes proper medicine, he will be cured. If there is no willingness to take medicine only, he will not be cured. But as long as he has willingness to take medicine, he will be cured. Like that. Okay, Apichet Sudhiracharo is a important reference in this connection. Then, Yatha Agni Susamriddharchi Karyotyedhamsi Bhasmasat Tathamadvishaya Bhaktir Uddhavainamsi Krishnasaha.
My dear Uddhav, just as a blazing fire turns firewood into ashes, similarly devotion unto me completely burns to ashes sins committed by my devotees.
A blazing fire of devotion burns the sins. This is the example of Ajamil also. Ajamil, what is the glory of Ajamil? He did not commit these two offenses to holy name. His chanting of holy name is considered pure chanting because he did not commit these two offenses. What are they? One, he never chanted Narayana, Narayana, Narayana to nullify his sinful activities. Second, he never committed sinful activities because he was calling his son Narayana, Narayana, Narayana. I mean, he was calling my son by that by chanting holy name, let me do sinful activities. He never had this mentality. His chanting is a different affair. His sinful activities are a different affair. So Krishna took that chanting only and then neglected all the sinful activities. Like that. And he chanted Narayana in a helpless condition. Like that. So when that kind of sincerity, when that kind of seventh offense mentality is not there, then devotional service will like a blazing fire will burn up all sins. So basically this 18 and 19 verses are not a license for us to slacken the practice of devotional service. They are only verses meant to give us hope. Okay, these are hope giving verses, but not encouragements to slacken devotional service or commit mistakes purposefully. Like that. Oh, Bhagiyam Sanakala Gosam. She came with a evil intention. Right? Still Krishna delivered. Whatever, I am chanting 16 rounds. So Krishna will definitely protect me. Yeah, that faith may be there, but that is never an encouragement to commit any mistake consciously. Like that. Lord refers to a devotion that is like a blazing fire. To commit sinful activity on the strength of the chanting of the holy name is a great offense. This we discussed. Then 20th verse. Nasadhyati mam yogo Nasankhyam dharma uddhava. Nasadhyastapastyago. Yatha bhaktir mamorjita.
My dear Uddhav, the unalloyed devotional service rendered to me by my devotees bring me under their control. I cannot be thus controlled by those engaged in mystic yoga, Sankhya philosophy, pious work, Vedic study, austerity or renunciation.
So all other processes he's saying they are secondary, they are not supreme. Bhakti is the only thing. Right? Nasadhayati. You cannot attain me through all the other processes, only through bhakti. Nayam sukhapo bhagavan dehinam gopika sutaha. Yoginam chatma bhutanam yatha bhakti matam. So, other processes people, okay, yoga, sankhya, whatever, karma, jnana, etc., they cannot enable one to attain Krishna. Only direct loving service. Okay? Jnana karma dhyana vartam. Next, Aghasura example is also given. Resident simply depended on Krishna. Okay? Then 21st verse. This is the most important verse. This verse is quoted in the second verse of the same chapter. Bhaktyaham ekaya grahyah. Shraddhayatma priyasatam. Bhakti punati mannishta. Svapakan apisambhavat. Bhaktyaham ekaya grahya. Shraddhayatma priyasatam. Bhakti punati mannishta. Svapakan apisambhavat.
Only by practicing unalloyed devotional service with full faith in me can one obtain me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am naturally dear to my devotees who take me as the only goal of their loving service. By engaging in such pure devotional service, even the dog eater can purify themselves from the contamination of their low birth.
Even dog eater also can be purified if he performs bhakti. And that kind of bhakti, devotional service, should be endowed with three qualities. Bhaktyaham ekaya. Ekaya means absolutely no selfish motivation. Unalloyed. Ekanta. Ekaya bhaktya. Then second line, shraddhaya. Endowed with full faith. Right? Not superficially. Then bhakti punati mannishta. Mannishta means Krishna is the only goal. Mannishta. Man here is referring to Krishna, Mat, Nishta. So totally fixed upon Krishna only. No other, demigods, this and that, nothing like that. So when that bhakti is performed to Krishna with these three qualities, ekaya, shraddhaya, man nishta, then even a dog eater can be purified. Aho vata svapachoto gariyan, yajjihva agre vartate namatubhi. Dharma satya dayo peto. Vidyatva tapasanvita madhaktya pedamatmanam nasamyak prapunatihi.
Neither religious activities endowed with honesty and mercy, nor knowledge obtained with great penances can completely purify one's consciousness if they are bereft of loving service to me.
So all the other processes are assistants, could be assistants to bhakti. Or bhakti can manifest even without that assistance also. But they can never supersede, or they can never take a more priority than the process, main process of bhakti. Right? Any process cannot be successful without an element of bhakti. Like that. And the success that other processes give, along with the assistance of bhakti, is also secondary. Bhakti only, pure bhakti only can give ultimate success, right? So the pious religious work, truthfulness, mercy, etc., they cannot purify one's material desires. Only bhakti can purify, right? What is the theme of Ajamil? Before Ajamil Kanda, how can one be saved from the sinful proclivities, sinful activities? He first says karma, karma kanda, atonement. He says kunjara shauchavat, reject, elephant bath. Then he says Jnana Kanda. He says Venugulmam Ivanala. Right? It's like bamboos burning and then later roots will come again. Roots will produce plants, more plants. But bhakti is niharam eva bhaskara. It's like sun dissipating the fog. Okay? Thus everything is incomplete and imperfect without loving service to the Lord. It's 2:30. It's not appropriate to continue. So tomorrow His Grace Radhika Vallabha Prabhu will continue this chapter. Tomorrow and day after tomorrow. Kritha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. And day after tomorrow, Friday. Tomorrow is flower dress for Radha Vrindavan Vihari. Evening there will be kirtan. And maybe there is a slight pushabhishek also for small duties. Because our altar cannot accommodate two pujaris behind the altar, deities and foot cloth. So that is the tomorrow's evening program. And day after tomorrow morning we have the Sudarshan Yajna in the temple hall. So that might delay our class slightly. If not 10:30, we may start at 11, something like that. So I'm just informing you.
Thank you all very much.
Thanks. Fourth question, 25 marks. Okay. Fourth question is like giving a summary of the whole answer. Then 14th chapter, first question. First question is 10 marks. Second question is 15 marks. In that quote, any four verses are there, you can make it two, if possible three. Two to three verses. Some you already know, bhaktyaham ekya grahya, na parameshtam.